Examiner. Today is Wednesday, 11/30/2022. The time is 9 a.m. This is the meeting of the Arizona Board of Chiropractic Examiners, and I would like to get a roll call.
Dr. Bennett?
Yes.
Ms. Powell?
Present.
Mr. Turbinson?
Present.
Dr. Knopf? And Dr. Guarino?
Present. Okay. So if you could make sure your phones are all muted, make sure if you're joining us virtually that you are also muted until it's your time to talk for your particular tab. I heard on the radio today that they're going to do some kind of testing with the phone alarms around noon or 12:30. So I don't know if that'll be happening or not, but if we're still meeting, that'll be helpful if everybody's muted for that one for sure. So we have a requirement if you're newly licensed in Arizona that you have to attend one of these meetings. So if you are attending either in person or virtually, I appreciate that you're complying with that. You're going to learn some things today, things that might hopefully keep you from having to come in front of the board and avoiding disciplinary action. Let's go to tab number one, which is our formal interview. And this is case number 2021-031 with Jed Zastro. Dr. Zastro, are you present? We've had trouble communicating with Dr. Zastro, so I'm going to call out a few times to him. If you are present virtually, now is your time to unmute yourself and let us know that you're present. And if there's any counsel for Dr. Zastro, go ahead and unmute yourself and go ahead and announce yourself. Okay. So board members, or Ms. Vanderveen, do you want to catch us up on what's happened with Dr. Zastro?
So Dr. Zastro, we've had difficulty contacting him. When he was before you last time, you issued a consent agreement for to not practice while we proceeded with this matter, and an additional for him to undergo some drug testing to aid the investigation. He agreed verbally to you all before that he would sign that agreement, but when we issued the agreement, he did not sign it. So then we subsequently sent out the interim order for the drug test, and he had 24 hours to comply with that drug test. He did not comply with that order nor contact the board about that matter. So we have brought him back with the recommendation that we just go ahead and move the matter to a formal hearing.
Okay. Thank you. So board members, is there a motion to move to a formal hearing?
So moved.
Okay, Dr. Bennett moved the formal hearing. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Powell.
Is that based on the allegation of non-compliance with the board order for drug tests and the drug test that he was found to have failed?
Yes, and would it be also appropriate to end other previously stipulated allegations?
That listed in the board report?
Complaint, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the question to move to formal hearing. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay. Four ayes have it with one absent. And that concludes the matter for the formal interview for today. So thank you to our court reporter for coming today. We don't have any more formal interviews or hearings, so you can leave whenever you need to.
Would the board like to make a motion right now to vacate item G8 under Jed Zastro for previously before the board moved it to a formal hearing?
Yes. So we're vacating tab number 8, which is also Jed Zastro.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's move on to tab number 2 under consent agenda. Dr. Thomas Tinlin.
We just need you to adopt the consent agenda as is, and we will go ahead and move this.
I move that we adopt the consent agenda as submitted.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Okay. Dr. Timlin is deceased. And so I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay, four ayes have it. And that concludes tab number two. Let's go on to tab number three in the matter of Dr. Gregory DeBlack.
Good morning.
Hi, welcome.
Jeff Hunter on behalf of Dr. Bidlack, and the doctor is on Zoom.
Okay. Dr. Bidlack, you're with us?
I think so. I mean, yes.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, so yes.
Okay.
Ms. Vanderveen.
The allegations are inappropriate physical contact, sexual improprieties, a danger to the health, safety, and welfare, and failure to complete continuing education.
Okay, Mr. Hunter, what would you like to say?
First of all, Dr. Bidlack denies the allegations did not occur. We have not, Dr. Bidlack does not work at the joint, so we do not have access to the record, number one. Number two, our reading the complaint does not give a specific date of the incident. So without the records and specific date, we can't comment beyond any further because we need to see the records to understand why she came, what the complaints were at the time, what treatment was provided, et cetera. So we need to request the records so we can further respond. But in terms of the essential allegation, that is denied. In terms of continuing education, we provided the documentation for, I think the only year that we're getting documents on is 2020, which was supplement when we have those. I think we complied with the others.
Okay, and so for clarification, you did request records from the joint chiropractic on this patient?
We have not requested records of joint chiropractic because we have no access to them. We're not allowed to have them. He's an ex-employee. The confidentiality precludes us from getting it without HIPAA authorization from the complainant. I'm assuming that the board has subpoenaed those records, and the board will provide us with those records.
We have not
subpoenaed
the records.
Okay. Okay, so we have our complainant with the initials JC. Are you present? Calling out to JC. Did we expect her to be here?
She was on. Just calling user one. Yeah, she's on.
Hi, JC. If you're present, we cannot hear you. You need to unmute yourself and only refer to yourself with initials. Star six might help with that.
She's unmuted.
Okay. JC, last time. Okay. So, board members, do you have any questions for Mr. Hunter or for Dr. Bidlack?
Yes, Mr. Hunter, does your, Dr. Bennett, does your client also deny the other complaints with regard to inappropriate sexual behavior that were placed in his employee file at the joint?
Yes.
Okay. And I guess question for staff, where are we with regard to getting these records from the joint? What do we need to do to take a look at these things so we have the facts?
For staff, because they are a registered business entity, we should be able to simply request this. So if you would like to continue the matter and allow board staff to go ahead and request those records from
yes.
the joint location, we can do that.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we continue this matter and that we request board staff to acquire these treatment records relative to this specific patient and also with regard to employment records relative to prior employment issues relating to similar conduct, including the termination notice.
Okay. So Dr. Bidlack has other cases before us and issues. Is this something that you might want to combine with the formal interview that he's already scheduled for?
I think we would want to wait
to get the
information.
Okay.
And let them have a chance to review it.
Okay.
So that would be a no.
So Does anybody think that a psychosexual evaluation of some type might be appropriate at this point? We've had several allegations with Dr. Bidlack already.
I question whether we would have a procedural issue in that we're dealing with this particular tab and this particular complaint, and we don't have enough evidence yet to really support the complaint. So taking any action on it at this time might not be appropriate. However, definitely think we should consider that once we have sufficient information.
Okay.
And if I can add something, we have not received the CE certificates for 2020 yet. They have sent 2021 and 2022.
Correct. We have to supplement those. We're getting those.
Okay. So the motion is to continue the investigation?
Yes, with the specified request for information.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay, we have four ayes in favor of continuing the investigation. We look forward to getting the 2020 information as well.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to go on to tab number four now. Forgive me if I say the name incorrectly, Dr. Michael Papamathiakis.
Papamathiakis.
Can I ask, are we taking these individually? Can we take them individually?
We're going to start with case 2021-044.
And for ease of, for you guys, you can call me by Dr. Mike.
Dr. Mike?
Yes, sir. Merry Christmas.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Greg Collins, attorney here for Dr. Mike.
I apologize.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Ms. Vanderveen?
For 2021-044, the allegations are danger to the health and safety and welfare, improper billing, failure to disclose financial interest.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Collins. What would you like to say as an opening remark?
I've read through the complaint. The danger to the health and welfare of patients, simply there's no connection between Dr. Mike's billing practices and any danger to any patient that gets service. The patients receive the service that they're entitled to, the proper service that they should receive. The conversations that Dr. Mike had with this provider about lowering the amount that they were allowed to collect on a bill that they had have nothing to do with patient care. At the end of the day, the patient had already received the care, this patient in question. It was simply about how much money every one of the providers was going to receive from a personal injury settlement. And you have to look at this from the big picture here. In the personal injury world, there's only a certain amount of money to go around to pay every medical provider, right? And at the end of the day, every one of the medical providers is likely to take a discount on their fee if they agree to this sort of setup, where they agree to get paid out of the personal injury recovery. The result of not accepting the negotiated resolution is an interpleader action that's filed in Maricopa County Superior Court. That's what's going to happen. If that interpleader action is filed, then the fee, the amount that is able to collect by all the providers, is going to get lowered by the amount of attorney's fees that are incurred in that interpleader action. So this has to happen. There has to be a frank discussion on the front end as to how much each one of the medical providers is going to receive. But because it isn't every one of the medical providers' interests to get a resolution on that issue, as opposed to having an interpleader action filed in Maricopa County Superior Court. The idea that Phoenix Spine found this unusual doesn't make this a unethical practice. At the end of the day, this is actually done so that patients can receive the care that they're entitled to when they don't have the money for the care because they have a personal injury lawsuit that will eventually pay for the medical care that they receive. Simple as that. This is the reality of that type of medical practice, and that reality is okay. because at the end of the day, that reality benefits patients. It doesn't hurt them. With regard to the rest of the allegations, the investigatory complaint finds that there's insufficient information to move forward on those. Dr. Mike has other counsel here, Attorney Conley and Attorney Marlowe, that will address the alleged fee splitting issue in connection with the other complaint. I'd ask the board to, you know, wait for their commentary until addressing those issues, which are somewhat caught up here, but are more central to the other complaint.
Thank you. Did we have the complainant with us with the initials HL?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, welcome. Would you like to make any kind of opening remark? We're not going to allow any kind of cross-examination, but then I'm going to ask my board members to ask you some questions to try to get to the bottom of what happened here.
Sure, yes. I was told that perhaps there'd be questions for me. We are very familiar with personal injury and the personal injury process and settlement process. I personally have been handling the reductions and negotiations on these types of cases for 5 years for Phoenix Spine. The issue is not the process of the reduction. It's that Dr. Mike threatened us not only verbally, but also in writing, saying that if I did not take more of a reduction, that he was going to let every attorney in town know, and that he would stop referrals to surgeons who would send patients to our surgery center for treatment. Not only did he make these threats, but he followed through with them. We received multiple calls from attorneys saying that they heard about this. The provider that he threatened, once again, in writing with the provider on the email as well, that if they keep using our center, they will not, he will not send cases to them, stopped sending cases to us. There's not a, in my mind, an issue of the process. We are very aware of how this process works. I'm very aware of how interpleaders come to in this. The issue is how Dr. Mike went about this process, threatening myself, our business, and then followed through with those threats when he didn't get the reduction directly from me that he wanted or that I wouldn't pay him directly there.
Okay, thank you. So I'm going to ask my board members if they have any questions for Dr. Mike here and his counsel, and then we'll cross back over to the complainant HL. Dr. Bennett, why don't you go ahead and start?
Okay, thank you. Dr. Papamathicus?
Yes, you can call me Dr. Mike if it's easier.
I'll call you Dr. Papamathicus.
Okay.
Mr. Collins. I have a number of questions. Some of this is background information. If it's not relevant to this complaint, we'll circle back to it. I just to make a point before I begin to ask some questions, I do believe that there is a potential connection to public safety here. And I believe that we need to get some questions answered in order to move forward with this. So just background, Dr. Papamathicus, are you the owner, the owner of Collision Chiropractic?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Are there any other owners?
Yes.
And can you tell me who those are?
George Papamathiakis.
Okay. Thank you. And how many people does Collision Chiropractic employ?
About 25. I'm estimating 25.
Okay, and these are on-site staff. These are not contracted providers.
These are correct. Yes. Okay.
All right. And who is Wendy Faust?
She's my associate chiropractor.
Okay. Is she, so when you say she's an associate chiropractor, that means she's a contracted provider or is she an employee?
She's an employee.
Okay. And what is her capacity?
Can you describe it?
What is her job duty at Collision Chiropractic?
She's a chiropractor.
Okay. Does she ever serve as a director of operations?
Yes.
Okay. So she also serves in that capacity?
Yes.
Okay. And what is the role of the director of operations?
Just help with patient care, help facilitate referrals, and help put out fires, if you would.
Okay.
Up management, more of a management role.
Okay. And is she engaged directly with patient care as well?
Yes.
And where is she, at what site is she?
Well, she was at 35th Avenue in Thomas. She now lives in North Carolina.
Okay. But during her tenure, is she still employed by Collision and Chiropractic?
She is.
In North Carolina?
Yes.
Okay. And so, please describe the nature of your role. What do you actually do in terms of function? Are you supervising staff and more in an advisory management role? Are you interacting with clients? What is your role?
Yes, to all the above. I'm a chiropractor there at the office at times when I need to help out.
Mm-hmm.
Management. Marketing, general operations of the business.
Okay. And is it your brother George?
Yes.
Does he participate in the management as well?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. So I'd like, if you would, to walk us through a typical client referral. In other words, what happens? How does a client come to you? What is the contact point? What is that process?
The contact point is usually through me or my office phone number.
So your office reaches out to the client, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then take it from there.
We discuss with the patient their needs.
And is that you or is that your staff typically?
It has been me. Sometimes it's been my staff.
And can you give me an idea of, sometimes did it start out as you and did other people take it over?
Well, I don't get to every call, obviously.
Okay.
We talk to the patient, if they were referred or how they found us. We ask them the basic location of where they live. And if our office is convenient for them, we try to find them another office. We have independent contractors to treat them that we can send to contractor agents.
Okay. So this is typically telephonic?
Typically.
Is it ever not?
I can't say. I've got to think. I'm sure there could be instances that patient walks in or...
So in rare instances,
yeah,
otherwise predominantly it would be telephonic. Okay. And that encounter that you or your delegated staff person has, if it is someone besides you, what are the credentials of that person? In other words, what are their qualifications? Are they an administrative person? Are they a physician? What are their...
They're an administrative person.
Okay. And so during that initial encounter, how much of a history is actually taken relative to the alleged accident-related injuries?
Brief. We know that they're injured, but it's more of setting them up for an appointment to see the doctor.
Okay, so it's more of an administrative encounter than it is anything else. Okay.
Correct. Well, they talk about, many medications or other things, but most of it's depending on the client.
Now, in the case of the majority of the cases which are being handled via administrative people, I would assume that they are not rendering any advice or doing anything that would be within the scope of the chiropractor.
No, mainly setting up appointments.
Okay. And so I would also assume then that during that encounter, there's no examination, there's no plan of care, there's nothing like that in terms of that patient, that encounter with that.
No, because they're not, the administrator is not a doctor, so no.
Okay. So in your opinion, during that encounter, is there a doctor-patient relationship established with you?
Yes, through Collision Chiropractors, yes.
And so what doctor would that be?
Well, I'm stating as they call clinics or chiropractors, usually that's from that point, I would say it's a doctor-patient relationship. Because they communicate with my staff. So I guess I'm not following you.
Well, that's you've kind of illustrated my point. If they're talking to a staff person whose job it is to collect enough information to determine that a referral is appropriate, there is no diagnosis rendered. There's no really any kind of doctor-patient relationship that I can see established. Am I incorrect in that assumption?
Well, they're contacting my staff and they're needing they're contacting us because they need care.
Mm-hmm.
So from that point, I would say there's a doctor-patient relationship because they called us and they need care. And then we set them up for an appointment. So from the moment they contact us, I would think there's a doctor-patient relationship.
Okay. So maybe we need to look into what a doctor-patient relationship really consists of, because I would suggest that it does not.
I think it has a HIPAA thing is once they call me, I can't obviously notate that this person called me. So if there's confidentiality, that would occur.
Okay, so let's just confirm and then move on that during that initial encounter, there is no history, there is no exam, there are no functional outcome assessments, there's nothing of that nature that happens. That doesn't happen until they're referred to the provider who's taking care of them. Is that correct?
Yeah, where they're set up with a doctor. So they're set up with whatever doctor.
Yeah, so those things occur when they reach whoever it is to whom they are referred.
Right.
Okay, thank you. And you refer these to doctors who have a contractual relationship with collision chiropractic, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, not all the time. Sometimes they're treated at my office
mm-hmm.
that I own 100%.
Okay.
Sometimes it depends on patient convenience.
Gotcha. And so how many doctors approximately are contracted with you at this time?
Say in the 20s, like 25 or so.
Okay. And approximately how many locations?
That's about the same, 20.
Okay. And for the record, are these doctors, I saw in two different locations you referred to them either as affiliates or as locations.
Mm-hmm.
What are you referring them to as? Do them as?
Well, the doctors are treated under Collision Chiropractors, so they're treating under my corporate umbrella. They're treating at Collision Chiropractors, even though they're affiliate doctors. They're under they're under care as a Collision Chiropractors patient.
Okay, because I think that it's important that the distinction be made in terms of an independent contractor relationship, whether they are part of the Collision Chiropractic. And the rules of employment apply, or the for independent contract, and we'll address that later. You have offices in New Mexico, is that correct?
I used to. I no longer do.
No longer. Okay. Do you now have them in North Carolina?
No.
Okay. So I'm confused then. You said that there was a Collision Chiropractic in North Carolina that Dr. Wendy was at?
Dr. Wendy works from home in North Carolina.
Oh, so she does... She's not functioning as a provider then?
She does sometimes. She does fly in at times to treat, but now she's in North Carolina.
Okay, so there's no Collision Chiropractic in North Carolina?
No.
Okay, and there are none in New Mexico?
No.
Okay, thank you. When these patients need a referral for surgical consultation or advanced imaging or whatever, is it correct that the doctors... contact you and arrange that referral?
Yes, they will fill out a form stating what the patient needs, and we help facilitate that referral.
Okay. And so who is the doctor actually making the referral to whatever?
The treating doctor will make the referral.
Okay. So when you get a referral request from them, you don't then submit your own referral request to that ancillary provider. You forward their request to them?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. So then I would assume that you're not reading patient records relative to that.
We consult to make sure, obviously Dr. Wendy will consult and make sure nothing's missing. For example, if she sees an MRI report there, she could consult the doctors if she sees something that may have missed.
Okay, so Dr. Wendy would be the, and is it Faust? Is that her?
Correct.
Would be the doctor working for you who would review the records to make it make sure that it's medically necessary that the referral be made. Is that correct?
She doesn't determine if it's medically necessary.
What did, so what's she doing?
She's reviewing it, and she won't tell the doctor whether to or not refer. That's up to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
She simply just reviews it and makes sure everything is there. And sometimes if she sees something that's could be more severe, she may call the doctor and consult with them.
Okay. So it's more of an administrative review?
Correct.
Okay. Is there any medical decision-making involved in that process?
By Dr. Faust?
Yes.
No, she's not treating the patient. But so I would say no, she consults.
Okay. Thank you. In the event that the patient needs some type of pain management care, again, outside the scope of the treating chiropractor, you also arrange that referral, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And who is the doctor providing physician, again, the doctor of record for those referrals?
Repeat the question.
So Dr. Larry refers patient Martha, wants to have them see a pain management doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Larry writes a referral. He sends it to you. When that referral is made to the pain management doctor for Martha, is it the Dr. Larry's referral or is it your referral that goes to them?
It's a collision, Dr. Larry's via collision chiropractors.
Okay. But you're not, you neither you nor Wendy are the referring doctor of record. Is that correct?
No.
Okay, thank you. And I would assume the same thing applies that Dr. Faust is doing the same review process for those kinds of referrals as well.
Correct. Okay. She does fill out sometimes some pain management groups want a form filled out for the facility. So she may fill out the form and attach the referral that the doctor made to that, showing that it's Dr. Larry making the referral.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And is it correct that once a patient's care by a contracted collision chiropractic doctor is finished, then you negotiate the settlement of the case with the patient's attorney?
Correct.
And is it you personally, or who is it that does that?
Sometimes it's me. Sometimes it's my staff.
Okay. And I see billing records. Well, never mind. That's a case that's coming up later. I'll just ask a couple of questions relative to this point, because I'm looking at some demand letters and the language in those demand letters. I send the demand letters. It says the above named claimant personally or throat. I assume that's a misspelling. I think there's a T at the end of that word and it needs to not be there. Through its authorized agent. And you know the document I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
When a bill is sent to, there's a, I think
it's you make an example.
Letter. let's see, where is that in the documents? I'll come back to that because it's going to come up later.
Okay.
So when payment is made, it's made to collision chiropractor.
Correct.
Right? And what happens to that payment?
We deposit in our account.
And then?
If it's my patient, it's just deposit in my account as a collection.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a contract provider, we have an agreed upon payment that we provided them, that we pay them, send them a check.
And that's a 50%?
Correct.
Division, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Roughly, correct.
And about how many times would you say this happens over the course of the year?
Did I write a check to the chiropractor?
Yeah.
A lot.
Hundred?
Hundreds. For the year?
Yeah.
Yeah, thousands.
Thousands?
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
And it's done on a per-patient basis, right?
Done on a per-patient basis.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it the case that if a reduction of fees is part of the settlement, that you are the one that determines the amount of the fee reduction, not the treating doctor?
Yes.
Okay.
As I'm the owner of the company, through Collision Chiropractors.
Yeah. Yes. And of that number of cases settled in a year, hundreds of thousands you just mentioned, about what percentage of those would you say involves a reduction of a fee?
The majority.
Majority like 51% or majority like
95%, 97%.
Okay. All right. And what is MedRoyal?
MedRoyal is a medical facility that I own.
Okay. Just answer my other question. Are there any other owners?
Yes.
And they are?
Ronnie Warda and George Papamafiakis.
Okay. And do you ever make, or does Collision Chiropractic ever make referrals to this, of this type to MedRoyal?
Yes.
Okay. And about, again, I'm not accurate, I'm not asking for specific numbers, but about how many referrals are being made to through you to MedRoyal on an annual basis?
I would say hundreds a month.
Hundreds per month?
Yeah.
Okay. So again, in the thousands?
Yeah.
In that range? Okay. And are these patients that you refer to MedRoyal made aware in writing that you have a financial interest in MedRoyal?
Yes.
And you can provide those documents to us?
Yes.
Okay. Do the MedRoyal providers have a similar contractual relationship with you involving the division of fees?
No, they're employees.
Okay. So, aside from your position as an owner in that organization, you do not derive any other income directly proportionate to the services that are provided by those providers that are employees?
Did I understand your question?
I think you're trying to ask him, when an employee renders services, you don't get a percentage of the service fee, right?
That's part of it, yes. I'm trying to determine your personal revenue relative to MedRoyal, is that revenue that's generated as an owner as opposed to any other form of revenue?
My doctors are salaried and I collect the profits of after overhead is paid.
Okay.
He gets paid the profits of the company.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, staff, is AP's care involved in this complaint or does it come up later? I've spent so much time with these three files that I tend to
blur. Part of the same complaint.
Okay, thank you. And so the care of AT, you're familiar with the patient to whom I'm referring?
Is that the, that must be the patient that was regarding the reduction? Yes.
Yes. Where did that care take place?
That at my main office on 35th Avenue, Thomas.
Okay, and Dr. Faust was a provider?
Yes. Check.
Pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure. Actually, I'm not here. So I just want to make sure.
And while you're looking at those records, there is another provider. Part of the issue here is that I don't believe we'll find on any of these records a printed name of any provider. All that I've ever seen in the very many documents that I reviewed was scribbled initials.
Okay.
With the exception of demand letters and stuff that were typed. So can you look there and see?
Dr. Faust was a treating provider.
I'm sorry?
Dr. Faust was a treating provider.
Yes, and there was a second signature that I also could not read.
Yes, Dr. Tari.
Dr. Tari.
He's another associate chiropractor.
So it was not you, correct?
No.
You did not treat this patient directly.
I may have. I don't know. Yes. I did see him a couple times. Yes, I did.
Okay. So a couple times. Sorry, I couldn't distinguish these signatures at all.
Okay.
Okay. We're going to talk about the contracts in a little bit. So this relationship that you have with doctors and Dr. Faust's role as director of operations, there's an email that was issued from her on the March the 16th of 2022. And it was to a lengthy list of people, and you can find that in the supplement, supplement one, page 51.
Dr. Bennett, we need to provide the supplemental material.
That's for the other case.
Okay. Then we can come up with that. Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
All right. So let's talk about this intimidation issue. We have a copy of the email that you sent to your colleagues. That is from you, correct? That was the,
that's the other
case.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not the same case? Okay. Sorry?
No, that's okay.
We're still on 2021-044, so you are speaking about the complaint and the extortion claim. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay,
well then I can rephrase it another way.
Yep.
Do you recall having sent an email to the complainant regarding the complainant to some of your colleagues?
I sent an email to complainant HL regarding the reduction.
I know, I'm asking about email sent to you, by you, to a number of your colleagues. Where it states that you sent information to only a select few who were aware of the board complaint.
That's 22. It's part of the case. In the other
case. I'm not referring to that evidence. I'm asking him if he sent this, so I think I'm okay with
that. Yes, you're good.
Okay.
I assume yes.
Okay.
It's not in the packet. Okay.
So your statement there is essentially that only a very few number of people even knew about a board complaint, and that was part of the reason for your indignation relating to this. Is that correct?
Can we qualify that? Is there a way to see a copy of the email? I want to make sure I'm talking about the same email.
It's not in my packet of materials. It's in the other set of attorneys' packet of materials. So
okay. Well, then we'll just address it then.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's all right. No, we.
Yeah.
We want to get this right. So the issue of care versus not providing care. You know, what is care? What is not care? In a letter which I believe is part of this, item page 19 of 157, is that the complaint that we're currently working on?
The one we're working on is of 183.
Okay. Well, then we'll get to it when the one that we're working on. And so, we'll get back. The rest of that questions pertain to other cases.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Bennett. I have just a couple questions before I ask my other board members. Dr. Mike, what were the dates of service that you treated as patient 18? Because I'm looking through the records, I'm having trouble reading all the signatures as well.
I can, okay. Okay, 121.
121?
Yes, sir. 128. 226. 20.
Along the lines of the billing practice, I'm looking in our packet of materials, board members, it's 183 pages deep, but there is a patient account ledger, and that is on page number 17 of our board materials, and it says the provider is MD on every date of service, which I'm assuming is you. Is that correct?
Yes, that's based on our schedule. and Medisoft is a schedule, and depending on who was on the schedule, that's what they put on there.
Okay, so is this a document that would have made it to potentially a third party payer or a attorney who would look at this and might be confused by who the payer was or who the provider was based on the ledger?
Well, the providers are signed on the bottom.
Okay.
Does this ledger go to third party?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And one other question. So you have ownership in the MedRoyal spa. Do you disclose your financial interest in that to the patient or the payers when you make these referrals?
Yes.
Okay. And there's proof of that in writing somewhere?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, Ms. Powell?
Yeah, thank you. Doctor, question about this $1,000 that your clinic received and the amount of money that was subsequently to pay by the attorney to HL firm or clinic practice, the clinical practice. Why would you have HL go back to the attorney to ask for more money when the funds had already been distributed? And why were you paid so little? It seemed like that was a big issue, obviously. Why didn't you go to the attorney and ask him or her why they paid such a low amount on your bill?
I did. When I initially talked to the attorney, they told me that they have no choice but to drop my payment so low because HL was taking the position that she wanted more. And,
So the attorney directly negotiated with HL for the payment that they received?
They were in the process of negotiating.
So you did not negotiate that? They did. Attorney and
HL. Yes, they did, yeah.
Okay.
And that was pre-disbursement of the money,
correct?
The attorney still held the money at that point. Dr. Mike did not hold the money at that point.
Okay, so the attorney, it was within the attorney's power to have paid you more and them less, but you're saying she was totally unagreeable to that idea and it would have been interpreted. Is that your
correct position? Yes.
Okay, so when you spoke to the attorney about this unfair amount, what did he say? Or she?
The patient was unhappy. The patient, AT, was unhappy with what was happening. The patient wanted, felt like she was should have been compensated a fair amount. In order for the patient to be happy, they were asking me to drop it to a significant portion, much more than all the other providers, especially HL. HL was taking roughly 65% of her bill, which was the highest bill, and I was taking 20%, and I was simply asking, hey, I can't take 20% on the dollar. I will interplead it because that's the power, and I threatened to interplead it.
And so if one of the providers objects to the distribution, it's going to be interpleaded.
Right. I'm just wondering how hard the attorney on the case worked to resolve this, or did he have a relationship with you that would suggest you would always take the lower amount if you couldn't settle it? I mean, is that fair to say?
I'm reasonable when it comes to reductions, but I don't always accept. It's got to be reasonable. We have to, I feel I just act reasonable is what I do.
It seems that HL was blindsided by your suggestion that they take less money. She was unaware of the negotiations that were taking place with the attorney because they dealt directly, which I'm hearing is not standard in your business. Usually you handle those negotiations, but for some reason the attorney chose to negotiate directly with HL.
I guess I didn't follow your question. I'm sorry.
The attorney is dealing directly with HL instead of you, and customarily the attorney would be negotiating with you on behalf of the entire settlement.
There are times when it's appropriate when providers aren't taking pro rata shares in order to reduce the cost of an interpleader. You would, before you file the interpleader, you would go to the provider and say, hey, should we be taking a pro rata split on this treatment? that was provided. Your care was reasonable, my care was reasonable, and there's times that should be appropriate, and it happens all the time.
This is not a referral to HL from you, as I understand. Dr. Dewanji was the doctor.
I referred the client to Dr. Dewanji, is where I referred it.
Okay. So he subsequently didn't do the surgery and referred it to the other doctor.
Dr. Dewanji did do the surgery. They just used HL's facility to do.
I'm sorry, the surgery site, right?
Yes, they just used the facility to perform the treatment.
Okay, so just put frankly, what business is it of yours, whatever the attorney pays to HL clinic? Why would you interfere in that?
Because the more they take, the less I will take.
That it wouldn't be customary for another provider to call another provider to discuss
it. It is customary. It does happen.
When you're totally unrelated to that patient, it's not one of your referrals.
Well, they're still on, there's still a pro rata care. There's a total medical bills on that. So there's times when you would, before interpleading, you will go talk to the doctor. And it's almost like, before I file an interpleader, let me talk to the doctor. Say, hey, this is the situation. It's not fair that I should take a less than a pro rata split than yours.
And that's something I would think you discussed with the attorney, not someone like
Adrian. The attorney did discuss it with them, and they denied, and they were saying no, and that's where it went to.
Okay. Just real quick, so I understand, what is the role of Zoo Docs? Do they refer to you, and then you refer to the clinic? Tell me how that referral.
Repeat the question.
MoveDocs is a source of referrals to you?
I've used MoveDocs for referrals, and they facilitate care, basically what they do.
They have a computer system and all that. Okay. So then they would send the client to you or the law firm to you? What's the chain of events? How does that?
Usually I'm referring, if a patient needs some type of treatment, I can refer to MoveDoc to facilitate the care of whatever the care they need.
So they'll refer?
Yeah.
They can do that?
Well, they facilitate the care, yes.
Okay. Who does the referrals? Who gets, I'm a PI. I call who? Do I call you? I call the law firm, and the law firm then refers to you to facilitate my care. You decide whether to use MoveDoc. I just want to know the chain of events.
Usually the patient either contacts me via online or through an attorney or through a friend that or another patient would refer to me. I get the patient. And from there, if the patient would need other care, right, I would refer to MoveDocs.
So they call you. That's the point of contact.
Yes. The patient, yeah. The patient or I get their contact information.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Powell. Mr. Turbinson, do you have any questions?
Yes, just a few. Dr. Papamathiakis, when you discussed that prior to this, any disputes that you have going into an interpleader action, you I think you said it was customary that you reach out to the other providers about lowering their portion of the amount received from the attorney. Is that correct?
Yes, it can be customary, especially if a provider isn't being reasonable in the reduction and they want their full bill, and other providers would have to take less as a result.
Is it customary that you threaten, referrals in the future in those discussions?
I won't say it's customary, but obviously if a doctor wouldn't be reasonable or something like that, why would I want to use them in the future? Kind of obvious.
Okay.
Yeah.
Those are the only questions I have.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Bedden, any follow-up questions before we switch over to complainant HL?
Yes. A couple of things real quickly. I'm looking back now at the billing records for AT, since it was brought up, and and there are others that are identical in this regard. And these are the ledger documents that we were referring to.
Mm-hmm.
And for each of those, number one, I see on the top of the letterhead, the logo of Collision Chiropractic, correct? And then I don't see any provider identified specifically. I see the initial MP. So is it the case that what this document says is that MP, which I assume is you, was the provider on those particular ledgers?
The way that the system kind of works is when you enter it in, it goes off the schedule of
what patient is assigned to what provider.
Yeah, we have a one set schedule where, and then depending on who the doctor sees. So that's just telling what that is just saying is both on that schedule. So it's not stating that I'm the provider for them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the one treating them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way the system sets up.
This is the provider that patient was assigned to.
No. That's not.
That's what the software is doing for you. Is that, am I correct?
No, it's more of a schedule that it was on. The MP is where we have it, where it has a schedule.
So this is the provider who is on this, whose schedule this patient existed. Is that correct?
Yes. It's the facility that it was done at. It's more the facility where it was provided, not the provider. It's listed the facility. Which location?
Since this was done at your location, not an affiliate doctor location,
right,
it indicates MP here.
Right.
If it was done at an affiliate doctor location, it would indicate a different initials.
Yes. Correct. Correct.
Okay. Thank you. That's okay. So
yes.
It's a matter of a facility identifier. It's not a matter of a provider identifier.
Correct.
So that being said, then there is no identification of a provider on these documents. Am I correct in that?
No, this is just the itemized bill.
The itemized bill does not identify a provider, correct?
No. It identifies Collision Chiropractors as a provider.
Okay. So then, as I look at the billing records, these identical types of billing records for services provided by multiple other Collision Chiropractic clinics, what would I find in that column where it talks about the facility?
It would say, for example, 107 will say top of my head, Union Hills.
So
yeah.
So when we looked at those documents, they would give us the location of the clinic once again.
Yes.
But it would not identify a provider.
No. The provider would be identified on the notes. On the actual soap.
Okay, and then when you, with these documents that are submitted to the attorney, I assume that the correct term is demand letter, and this, maybe Ms. Powell can help me with this, but it's the account summary saying, I'm now officially making claim for these, and you understand the document I'm talking about?
Is it the initial? Yes. That's a Collision Chiropractor patient, and we treated from this date to this date. Is that what the...
Yeah, what is your term for that form? I'll use your term, whatever it is.
I don't think I have a term for it.
Okay. Can we call it the claim demand letter?
Sure.
All right. So in the demand letter, it says, I have reviewed... it refers to yourself as the claimant/agent. There's a paragraph at the end of these things.
It says, "If you have any questions or concerns, please put a call." Is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about a.
Is this the form? Is this the form you're referencing?
No,
it's
a form that has. I'm sorry that I did not write down the reference on this. That's what I didn't write down. That's where it is in.
Would I be able to? Would you be able to give it to me and I could look at it?
I don't have it. I would. We would have to look it up. And I'm sure it'll come up later, but when you use the term claimant/agent in your communication with attorneys relative to receiving payment for a PI case. What is that term? What do you mean by that?
I guess I have to see how it's, in what form it's written in. Claimant, I'm trying to think of where I have that in my paperwork, so I don't know where that would even be under claimant or agent.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. We will need to we'll need to take this up.
If I had the form, I could probably answer it better.
Just for the record, in it, it says, and I'm reading from the document that we will retrieve, the language pursuant to blah blah blah. The above named claimant. Comma, personally.
The lien form? Are you talking about the lien form?
You know what? Let's just wait till we get the document to remove any kind of potential redundancy.
Sorry.
And then with regard to the contract itself, it states the company is a licensed chiropractor company. Is that the correct language from the contract?
I believe so.
Okay. What does that mean?
That means the company has a licensed chiropractor and is able to do business under the board as a chiropractic company. Because the company is owned by a chiropractor.
Okay, so, but it doesn't say that. It says it's a licensed chiropractor company. That's what the language says.
Yeah, well, I'll assume if a doctor is licensed, because he's able to own a company as a chiropractic company.
I assume that you assume that. That's why you put it in your contract.
Right.
Not sure how cool it is, but and then further it states that that Collision Chiropractic is engaged in the business of chiropractor healthcare. And also note as aware as that the contracting provider also desires to expand its chiropractic healthcare business. I'm quoting from your contract here, correct?
Yes.
So both parties are engaged in the same thing, and that is chiropractic healthcare business. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And what does chiropractic healthcare business, what is your definition of chiropractic healthcare business?
My definition of chiropractic healthcare business would be company that's owned by a chiropractor that treats chiropractic patients.
Okay. So treatment is implicit in that definition. Is that correct?
Yes. So in order to own a chiropractic company, you would have to treat. Chiropractor is a form of treating a patient. So correct. I'll say treatment. Yes.
Okay. Then later in Section 1.3, the contract states the company will not offer direct patient care, but may we consult with the contracting doctor on patient care and progress of recovery. Is that the correct language from the document?
Yeah, from the top of my head, yeah. I don't have the document in front of me. But yes, sounds correct.
Okay. And the agreement is for a 50-50 split of the fees for care, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then in Section 1.4, it says the company will be the only party or entity authorized to negotiate a reduction in payment. So that specifically stipulates that the doctor under contract may not independently negotiate a settlement, that they are adjudicating that authority to you as a stipulation of the contract, correct?
Yes, it's a collision chiropractor's patient, so we agreed that I was the one.
Yes. Reduced. Okay. All right. So I reviewed the documents from settlements of over 100 of these cases. And as you alluded to earlier, there were fee reductions in every one of these. Mm-hmm. And in the 20 or so cases that we looked at where there was total billing included as opposed to just what the settlement was, the billing reductions were between 30% and 70%, leaving these providers with an average of not 50% of their fees, but far less than that, about an average of about 20%, sometimes as low as 11%, less than a quarter of the fees that they've delivered. Do you inform the doctors that you are contracting with of this fact?
They are aware of it.
And where is it that you inform them of that?
They know that they get a percentage of the fee that's collected. So they get a percentage of the collections is what they get.
And do you advise them with regard to the probability of that fee being 25% of what they're billing?
Absolutely.
Okay. And then you stipulate in the contract that they must have the Collision Chiropractic logo on their forms. Is that correct?
Correct.
And what is your rationale for that?
Because the patient belongs to Collision Chiropractors. They're treating under Collision Chiropractors umbrella.
Okay, thank you. And finally, under Section 1.12, it states that the company will find an acceptable provider to care for the patient's needs, and that the company will be the only person authorized to refer any patients for treatment. So that, again, stipulates that you are the only person authorized to make referrals for that patient. Is that correct?
No, sir. I'm the one that's authorized to facilitate the referral. I'm not making a referral. I'm just facilitating.
I'm sorry. I misstated that. Yeah. So it authorizes you to be the only. Well, the language says the company will be the only person authorized to refer any patients for treatment. So the language there says that you are referring. And what you're saying now, I think, is you're not. You receive the referral and facilitate that process.
Correct.
So this would be inconsistent with the language of your contract, then it would be.
Language of that contract isn't the best.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you. Those are all the questions I have at this time.
Okay. One more question from me before we switch over to HL. Looking at the treatment notes for this patient, AT, I saw that there was an MRI that was ordered, and it was ordered by you. Would that be typical if you had a satellite office, let's say one of your independently contracted patients or chiropractors, and they needed to order an MRI, would that MRI order have your name on it when it went to the facility, or would it have the treating chiropractor's name on it?
We refer the MRI. We attach the referral form of the referring doctor, right? And then whatever facility they're going to go to, we will fill out the, for their convenience, their name, their phone number, make sure it's legible, and
so
send that.
Administrate the referral that way.
Yes, but it's the provider that made it's that patient's, that doctor that made the referral. It's his referral.
Okay. And I, you know, you talk about these independently contracted providers, 25 different locations. Are they all getting 1099?
Yes.
From you?
Yes.
Okay. So if we request that information,
we have that
be able to submit all that.
We have that today.
Okay. Okay. Let's go to HL now, the complainant, and board members, any questions for her? Ms. Powell?
Yeah. HL, you had not received payment at the time that you received this email. Is that correct? You've not been paid at that time?
Correct. Yes, we had not been paid at the time of Dr. Mike's threats. We actually, no, we had not been paid at the time.
Do you have any problems negotiating with the attorney about the final? It looks like 60% that you took on the bill.
No. So originally, they had reached out to us to correct the timeline of what's been discussed here. They had reached out to us in May 25th of 2021 via phone, and we spoke to a paralegal at the attorney's office. They let us know what the case settled for. They gave us an offer. We gave them a verbal back. She said that they would review and get back to us. We had not had any further conversations with the law firm at the time of Dr. Mike's emails and threats. So there was no discussion of interpleader, no counter back from the law firm yet, no fight at the time of Dr. Mike's emails.
So just so we're clear, there was never any further discussion about reducing even further your bill between you and the attorney?
After Dr. Mike's emails, the conversation picked back up with the attorney. So we continued to discuss with the law firm after Dr. Mike's emails.
Can you tell us a little bit about that discussion and what the attorney said to you or the paralegal, whoever you spoke to?
Sure. They emailed back and forth with actually our counsel, because at this point, due to the threats that have been made, we brought this to our general counsel, who...
So then you never did talk to the law firm after that. That's what I'm trying to ascertain.
I did not talk to the law firm after that. No, we emailed back and forth. Ultimately, because of wanting to preserve some relationships with the surgeons as well, we did end up coming down on the reduction slightly. But we had gotten the whole breakdown of the settlement, what the attorney's fees were, and what a 40% reduction across the board would look like for everybody. So we continued the conversation into the week after that Dr. Mike had his interactions with us.
So did you settle for 40%?
We ended up settling for less than that. We had asked the attorney's office for $11,500. We ended up settling for $10,500. The surgeon who was also being threatened by Dr. Mike in this, just really wanted this to be behind everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah.
No other questions?
Okay. Dr. Bennett?
Yes. Hello. This is Dr. Bennett. You mentioned that you have been operating in the face of personal injury billing and so forth for about 5 years, is that correct?
Yes, just about 5 years I've been with Phoenix Spine.
Do you have experience in this area prior to that?
Not in reduction specifically. However, I was an adjuster for an insurance company, so I was familiar with that side of personal injury and auto accidents, but I did not handle any reductions or whatnot prior.
So you've looked at that life from both sides, so to speak.
I have.
Okay. All right. So within that context and with your experience, how frequently is there a reduction in a PI case? What is the typical frequency of a reduction in the settlement of a PI case?
Nearly 100% of the time there's going to be some kind of reduction. From our standpoint on a facility claim, there's going to be some sort of reduction.
Okay. And you mentioned that, in this case, it sounded like, did I understand correctly that the original, billing was for $11,500? And you requested $10,000 or were paid $10,000, is that correct? Or you requested $10,000?
No, sir. Our bill charges were $19,325. And we had initially offered to the attorney that we would accept $11,500. At the end of the day, once this completely was settled, we ended up getting $10,500 from the law firm.
Okay, and then it sounds to me like that Dr. Dewanji basically sort of took the hit to keep the peace. Is that your impression?
I can't speak to their motives. I know that I reached out to their office manager as well, just because she kind of got put in the middle of this. And she said, hey, listen, we're not upset. We're not pushing for interplead. we're happy to take a larger reduction. You know, we just want this over with. And I, you know, gave her the breakdown and said, well, listen, if everybody takes a 40% reduction, the patient walks with X, the attorney gets their full fees. She thought that sounded great, asked if we had given, you know, that math to the attorney. And because she thought all that sounded very reasonable. And she just kind of, you know, wanted this to be taken care of. So we continued our conversations with the law firm.
Thank you. Do you have, you have made an accusation here of extortion, and that you stated that there were threats made and that they were carried through with and did in fact have an impact upon your revenue and business. Have you quantified that information? Do you have some sort of measurable impact on the impact of that on your business?
Yes, I don't have a dollar amount. I know after this, we immediately had two surgeries that were pulled that I could, you know, put a number on if we needed to, where one of them was another Dr. Dwanji patient, where she let us know that she had to, quote, honor the referral from Dr. Mike. And since Dr. Mike had treated the patient, or Collision Chiropractic had treated the patient previously at some point in their care plan, that she could not bring that patient to our center for surgery. And then there was another patient who reached out to us, who is also a chiropractor in the Valley. And he was personally going to get surgery. And he canceled his surgery due to, he used the term of what we did to Dr. Mike. But from a standpoint of cases, we did quantify that. In 2021, we had seen 68 personal injury cases. And after this incident where Dr. Mike made his threats, our personal injury for 2022, we've done 23 cases. So about 2/3 reduction in our personal injury volume after his threats.
Did you correlate those with, these could have come from many different sources and be caused by many different things. Have you correlated how many, say, what percentage of those 68 referrals in 2021 were Collision Chiropractic referrals versus the percentage of those in 2022?
No, there's not really a reasonable way for us to know. I mean, when a patient is coming for surgery, the surgeon is bringing that patient, and the surgeon has made the decision that that patient is a candidate for surgery. I don't have the patient's full history. I don't know where they were treated. I don't know if they had chiro. Did they have PT? XYZ, especially from an admin standpoint. So for instance, the patient that Dr. Dwanji pulled after the fact, I had no idea that patient had previously treated with Collision Chiropractic. We wouldn't have that information. We had not received very many. I don't have that number directly in front of me, but it was like less than 15 or 20 direct referrals from Collision Chiropractic. Are there other patients that we treated that may have been involved with Collision Chiropractic? Sure. But as the surgery center, by the time a patient needs surgery, they've typically seen a lot of providers because they have tried conservative care and they've tried chiro and they've tried PT and they've tried pain management. And then they got to a surgeon who, you know, made the recommendation that they need surgery.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chervinson, any questions for a complaint in HL?
None for me. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So, board members, let's circle back. We have three allegations that we're dealing with today. we can continue this investigation if needed, take action today. We have options, but we can't spend all day on this one. So,
before you proceed, Dr. Lieberman is a witness who we, board staff, has not interviewed because we weren't aware of that information until yesterday. He is on the Zoom. If you have any questions for him, for Phoenix, before you proceed, sorry.
Okay. Dr. Lieberman, can you announce your name for the record?
Sure. Good morning. I'm Dan Lieberman, L-I-E-B-E-R-M-A-N.
Okay, great. And how do you fit into this puzzle?
I'm the principal of Phoenix Spine and Joint, the surgery center company, and I'm its primary owner.
Okay. So can you add any clarity to what we've heard today?
I just, you know, in my past life, I was a doctor, and I would, a medical doctor, a neurosurgeon. I just like to say, I feel like these personal injury patients, we really, as doctors, owe them our best care. And I feel like in this case, a lot of decisions are being made based on financial considerations, and I haven't heard one word about where was the best place for the patient to have surgery, who was the best surgeon. Instead, a care network seems to have been formed based on financial remuneration only. And to me, that's not appropriate. So, take it for what it's worth. But I also, our business was certainly badly harmed by the actions of this individual. I'm a doctor. I realize people are not always at their best. Anybody can lose it on one phone call. But there was a coordinated attempt to blackball us in the community using referrals as an economic weapon and not in any consideration given to their medical needs. And to me, that's an egregious act of unprofessional conduct.
Okay, thank you. Board members, any questions for Dr. Lieberman? Okay, thank you. Okay. Board members, what's your pleasure? I guess I have a question for staff. You know, our third accusation, or our third we have failed to disclose financial interest. Does that apply in this case? Was there a referral?
We have never been given anything that shows that he did provide like a disclosure to the patient.
Was this patient referred to MedRoyal?
No.
Did that come from the anonymous complaint, that information?
Yes.
Okay, so it wasn't substantiated in this particular case with this particular patient?
That would be correct.
Okay. All right. So I think we're looking at mostly bullet points number 1 and 2, for danger to the health and improper billing. So do you want to continue this? Is there more information that we need, or we can continue it just to continue it, to get through the other cases and see if we want to combine them at some point? Or do you think we can deal with this today?
As I have reviewed all three of the cases, and as I mentioned before, they all seem to converge upon similar points. There are a couple of points that we have not yet addressed. My question is, with regard to this particular complaint, there's enough evidence of lack of evidence and clarity that's needed, that it needs to be moved forward. And candidly, there's enough evidence from what we've uncovered so far, or lack of evidence that we've uncovered so far, to justify moving forward on the other two complaints. And so if we need to listen to the other two complaints and take them up now, that because of due diligence, then I'm fine with that. Otherwise, I would think we would just say, hey, this is going to go forward. Let's get all the data we can and try and expedite this process.
Okay. It may not be my place to interject here, but I'm not the attorney handling the second part of this investigation. I would think it would make sense to at least hear from those attorneys prior to voting on how to proceed here, since they are here. But it's not my place.
There's two other matters, and we asked them to take them individually, and they're trying to resolve whether or not they're going to take, how they want to proceed with this one, and we can, and you can make a second motion to combine them, should you choose to do that, with the other two cases. And you can make that at the end, if that makes it easier for you.
There we go.
So we can make the determination to move forward on this one, and hear one or both of the others.
Correct.
And make the adjudication to combine them at that point.
Correct.
I'd like to make a motion, Mr. Chairman, that we move into executive session for legal advice.
Okay.
Second.
All right, we've got a first and a second. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. I got a silent aye from Dr. Turbinson. Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, we have four ayes that have it. We're going to move into executive session in the next room. You can all stay here. The time is now 10:25 a.m. We're going to consult our attorney. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Okay, the time is now 10:41. We're back in open session. Mr. Turbinson, you can hear us?
Yep.
Okay, great. Okay, let's continue. So, board members, what's your pleasure? What would you like to do?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we continue this complaint forward and proceed with the stipulation that we gathered some more information relative to the points that have been raised, and that we continue, that we go ahead and hear the rest of the complaints and see what they have to say as well.
Is it 2021-044 that you would like to continue for investigative purposes?
Correct.
Okay,
is there a second?
Second.
Okay, any further discussion, board members? If those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay, the ayes have it. So we're going to visit this on another day, and we're going to get to the other complaints. So we're done with you today, Mr. Collins. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Okay, so we're going to go to case number 2022-041 on the same tab. And we're also going to get to the 2023-004. These are all going to be continued. I want to give you a chance to be heard today, but we need to expedite the process of how we're hearing this today, because we don't have all day to do this. So that said, we'll start with Ms. Vanderveen.
We have supplemental investigative materials that came in yesterday, so we need to distribute those.
Okay.
That was just a 10-minute break.
Okay.
Review it.
Yeah, that's fine. So we're going to take a 10-minute recess to give you an opportunity to look at the materials that we received yesterday.
Do we have to look at?
The board has not seen these either. We're reviewing them.
Okay, the time is 10:51. We're back in open session. We're on tab number 2022-041. I see Mr. Turbinson is back with us. Everybody should have had a chance to take a quick look at least at the 59 pages that we received for supplemental information. Ms. Vanderveen, can you give us a board brief?
Sure. This is case number 2022-041. The investigation allegations are improper billing, releasing privileged board information, misleading advertising, failing to disclose a financial interest, failing to identify itself as DC. That is all the allegations.
Okay. And we have Dr. Papamatsikas, and you're represented by counsel. Can you introduce yourselves for the record?
Good morning, Chairman. My name is Thomas Connolly, honorable board members, counsel, Mr. Dominic. I, along with my co-counsel, Thomas Marlow, represent Dr. Michael Papamatsikas in this matter, these matters.
Thank you. So you've heard the allegations, and we've read your responses. Do you have anything you'd like to say briefly to get started?
I just wanted to let board members know, and we'll get that to Mr. Dominic quickly. We did bring with us, addressing some of the questions that came up, 1099s for the various physicians' offices that you were questioning about. It was not addressed in the initial complaint. It was not brought up. So we, of course, didn't attach it to our initial response. It wasn't something we saw until 8 days ago with the investigative report. We also brought the disclosures that are made by both Med Royal to patients saying that Collision Chiropractors owners have an interest in it, and the Collision Chiropractors disclosure that says they have an ownership interest in Med Royal. As one representative sample, I didn't know what the policy was here with the board, so I redacted one patient name, but it's dated more than 2 years ago to show that the patients do sign it and that it exists. We can certainly give more, and Mr. Dominic may have specific requests that he has. We also are prepared to give at least the 3 or 4 page sample to him today.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, to answer your question, we are not, and also in the interest of time here, we're not going to make a statement. We filed an exhaustive response to the investigative report along with numerous exhibits. So we know the board has reviewed that, and so we'll just rely upon that, but of course answer any questions that the members may have.
Okay, thank you. Board members, do you have any questions at this time? We'll start with you, Dr. Bennett.
Yes, Dr. Papamatsis.
Hello again.
Mathakis?
Close enough.
Okay. We touched upon this earlier, and I wanted to return to it now since we're in the proper case.
Mm-hmm.
There was an email that was sent, I believe, by you to a number of your Wittesen colleagues. And you state that only a select few were aware of your board complaint in that, and that this was part of your rationale for identifying a particular source for it, the same person with whom you had the adverse relationship with previously. So my question to you is, are you aware that the contents of every board meeting are published as a matter of public record and are available to virtually anyone who would wish to inquire about them?
Yes.
Okay. And then you state, I'm planning on filing suit on Phoenix Spine and Anna Lieberman once we can confirm it was them that sent the complaint. And it implies there that that you feel as though the fact that the complaint was filed anonymously with sufficient enough evidence to sue them? Are you currently still of that opinion?
No, we have evidence of who wrote the letters now. She's here.
Okay. And when you sent this email, you attached a couple of documents, correct?
Correct.
And one of those was the subpoena for the board, the communication from the board to you about this particular complaint. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And are you aware that there was confidential information in that document that you furthered?
Yes. I only sent those to members of my corporation, or affiliates of my corporation.
Okay.
I did not send that around town. I just sent that to my direct
doctors that he was contracted with.
Right.
Okay.
As they got anonymous letters, which is how they found out about all this.
Okay. And were the people that you sent that copy of that subpoena to otherwise privy to the same confidential information pertaining?
Yes, they're part of my company.
Okay. I have no further questions at this point.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Fowle, any questions?
Not at this time, thank you.
Okay, how about Mr. Turbinson?
Yeah, I just have one question. Doctor, is the agreement that's Exhibit C, is that still in operation with any of, I guess, the co-parties that you have that agreement with?
I'm turning to the exhibit. If you could, and I apologize, my fault, I was making noise. Could you repeat the question? You're referring to Exhibit C from Mr. Dominic's report. It's the original contract. What were you asking?
Yeah. Let me ask it a different way. Has that been terminated in the last year with any providers?
It has been terminated with certain providers.
It has.
But not all?
No.
Okay.
There are if I may address it from the legal side, Mr. Collins was correct when he said originally the contract was not worded in an ideal fashion. It's being addressed and restructured now. It will be recirculated. It was being restructured before the fee agreement, or excuse me, the complaint was sent. And part of this issue goes to what we were originally talking about. It's the mode and method of operation that the doctor was aware of. Dr. Bennett asked a lot of questions about the specific language in the agreement. His involvement was, and it'll be subject to your future investigation, more involved than what was portrayed in the agreement.
Okay. Those are the only questions I have.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Turbinson. One of my questions is, I'm thinking about the logistics of how all this works. So you have a bunch of independently contracted physicians. And are they required to all use the same fee schedule that you dictate to them for
yes.
these patients?
Yes.
Okay.
The same fee schedule as collision chiropractors.
Okay. All right. Board members, any other questions? Staff, anything you want to comment on? Yes.
One quick question, if I may, Doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm trying to ascertain what your full involvement is for every case. You are doctoring, administrating both, and to what degree. Can you speak to that a little bit?
As far as the office I personally own, there's times I do treat. As far as any independent contractor doctors I have, we have consulted. We help facilitate referrals.
Let me stop you real quick if I may interrupt you. Just on the referrals and consultations, do you consult with the doctor in that particular facility?
If we have to, yes.
About you consult with them. How do they call you to consult with them? Do you check in on a routine basis, like 15th of every month? How do you determine if you're going to be consulting?
We do on a case-by-case basis. We also will call the patients and kind of follow up with them, see how they feel about their treatment.
Consultation would imply there was a need, either a second opinion or further treatment of a different.
Correct, treatment. Yes. Sometimes the doctor will call me and say, listen, now the patient's not responding. Maybe get them off the PT instead. And we'll discuss it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we'll just discuss it as a case-by-case basis, and Dr. Ward will give me details, and we'll go through and just talk amongst ourselves and what we think and what I do in that situation, I go from there. Ultimately, the decision is on the treating provider, and they make the decision, and fall through with it.
Have any of these offices ever independently referred to another specialty provider that was not on, let's say, your list or the doctors you normally work with or in your network, but outside?
Yes, there's times, sometimes a patient has a specific doctor that they want to see, and we facilitate the referral through. If a patient specifically has, for example, are there PCP that they want to see, we'll facilitate that. Help facilitate the MRIs so the doctor or PCP will have those reports.
So the same would hold true for MRIs or diagnostic centers. You don't necessarily refer to your network of people that they could refer to anyone, right?
Yes, if they have a preference, we could absolutely discuss it. And we could consult on who they prefer I've done that multiple times. We always want to make sure we get patients to doctors that, one, are very good doctors, and two, we'll work with them at the end.
Maintain a standard of care that we would consider acceptable. How are your doctors trained, your chiropractors? Do you train them? Do you have someone come in and train them on record keeping and documentation and legal compliance?
They take their continuing education, their license, and they have a responsibility as a licensed provider to make sure that their stuff is properly done. We do review their notes before setting them out, just to make sure there's no errors or omissions or anything that obviously a double check of the actual record.
So there's no one in charge of training per se?
Some of my doctors have done trainings of seminars that I've gone to as well, but usually it's other board-approved seminars.
Are there any other services that you personally provide these patients?
Chiropractic, basically. Yeah, just whatever falls under the chiropractic guidelines.
I should have been more clear, in the other offices, not your office, but the other contracted offices.
All my contracted offices are providing chiropractic care.
Do you have any role in that care?
Yes, as I explained, we consult and we review their records, and we're actively involved.
So that's the total scope of your
involvement. Absolutely. There's a who scope, and we make sure clients are happy and things go smoothly.
Thank you.
You're welcome, ma'am. Thank you.
Yeah, Dr. Bennett.
Yeah, thank you. So aside from the patients who you treat personally in your clinic, I'm now referring to any patients in other clinics, you mentioned that you follow up and see how they're doing with their care and so forth. Did I understand you correctly that you did say that? And how frequently does that occur?
My staff usually does it to make sure that everything is going okay with their treatment. Just a general follow-up with the patient. I would say I can't give an estimate. My staff handles that. You just got to go through and know which patients are which.
I understand. Thank you. Yeah. So I'm just trying to get a handle on the nature of that encounter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not done by a licensed chiropractor. It's a staff person who's doing sort of a quality control check, something like
yes.
that?
Yes, and there's times I have talked to patients as well.
Okay, and so that's really is my question. How frequently are you speaking with patients? The reason why, just to help clarify where I'm mm-hmm. coming from on this, we can't really consider non-licensed staff and their interaction with patients unless they are certified chiropractic mm-hmm. assistant under the direct supervision of a licensed chiropractor. To be, that's not really service, that's really administrative stuff, correct?
Yeah, I understand.
And so the nature of my question is with regard to your or your licensed personnel, at how often are your on-site management type people actually having dialogue with patients of other providers?
It happens, I would say, daily, maybe possibly daily, between Dr. Faust and myself. At times, if a patient is unhappy for some reason, they're not getting well, they talk to their attorney. I may call them and talk to them and consult with them, and then consult with the doctor as well.
Okay. And that would be the word that you would use, correct? Consult?
I'll consult with the doctor, correct.
Yeah. I'm talking about the patients. Talking about licensed doctors of chiropractic in your clinic.
Yes, I believe I will consult them.
Okay,
and see what their needs are.
Are these consultations ever documented anywhere in a record built for?
No, it would be just something that patient tells me, and I would go back and tell the doctor.
Okay. Well, if I may add to that, and we have brought those. They have not been provided to Mr. Dominic yet, as my co-counsel has already explained, but there are written communication, either by email or text, between Dr. Papamathiakis and the other contracted physicians, I believe, Dr. Bennett, that you're referring to. So there are other communications, which I assume would fall under the same heading that you're asking about, communicating regarding patients between the physicians. Mm-hmm. So those do occur. I have a sampling of those here that occur between the doctors, if that helps.
We'll look forward to looking at those. Thank you. I'm just trying to seek some clarity with regard to, there seems to be ambiguity with regard to whether there is treatment going on or not treatment going on, and the relationship between that and compensation. So I'm trying to seek a path of clarity in terms of what all of that means in this situation. And with that, I have no other questions.
Okay. What about the advertising issue, not using the initial TC and identifying yourself as a chiropractor in your coalition chiro?
I read that in the report, and I've corrected it.
Okay. So you're aware you need to identify anywhere that you
I am. I did not. Yes, I did not know. So as a corrector right away.
As a chiropractor.
Yes, I corrected that day. I got the report.
Okay. All right, so we'll have staff follow up on that.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I have a question. May I?
Yep.
In some of the conversations that were presented to the board previously, I would really like, for our purposes, to understand, what do you define as the primary responsibility of the patient? Like, who is that person?
The primary responsibility of the
patient? Your attorney says it's whether to open. Subcontractors to collision chiropractors will still maintain responsibility, in many instances, primary responsibility for the patient. And who is referring to you? So who is primarily responsible for the patient? Is it the subcontractor or is it you?
I'll say me. Collision chiropractors, okay. Yes. They're treating under collision chiropractors. They're a collision chiropractor's patient.
But how can you be the primary person responsible for the patient care if you are not seeing and actively engaging with the patient?
I'll say, just like my associate chiropractors that treat patients that I don't actually see, it still falls under the Corporation of Collision Chiropractors. Same way as an associate of mine that's a salary position, if something happens, collision chiropractors, myself, falls on me, I'm the owner of the company, it will fall on me.
If I may, on the doctor's behalf, Ms. Vanderveen, I think there's two nuances to what you're talking about. One is nuance of patient care, the other is legal responsibility and ultimate liability, which for most anything is, as we refer to it, the touchstone principle of where it is. You have your own touchstone that you're looking at in certain degrees, but that still has to mesh in with other statutes. And at the end of the day, far-fetched example, chiropractor breaks some patient's neck. At the end of the day, as an attorney, I'm going to be, if Dr. Bennett, for example, was a subcontractor or an independent, I'm going to be suing him. I'm going to be suing his practice. I'm going to be suing Collision Chiro. I'm going to be suing Dr. Mike. That's part of what was referenced in there about ultimate responsibility and touchstone principle. So I understand your question, but there's two different nuances to it. So to the extent you were implying we said something different than he did, it might have been simply interpreted that way by you is what I'm getting at.
Okay, so board members, any more questions, or do we want to continue this one as well so we can get to the next one?
I want to continue. Okay. I move that we continue this and get on to the next one.
Okay.
We continue the investigation in this matter and move on to 04.
Correct.
Okay. Is there a second?
Okay.
All right. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay, hearing none, we're going to continue it. That'll give you an opportunity to look at the supplemental materials in more detail as well. All right, so we're going to go on now to tab number 2023-004. Vanderbeen.
The investigative allegations are danger to the health, safety, and welfare, and violation of professional conduct.
Okay.
Mike?
Doctor.
Oh, sorry, my
Yes, they were moving to your third case.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I thought we were finished.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. Okay.
We all wish we were.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
I thought you quit.
You're not letting me off easy, are you?
Okay. So we have the allegations before you. Do you and we've read your responses again. Do you have anything brief that you'd like to say?
No, I think our position is set forth pretty specifically in our response, and we know the board has reviewed those.
Okay. And you have in your hands 127 pages of additional documents that we received last night relating to this case. So you'll have a chance to look at that on at your leisure on another day, and we're not going to ask you a lot of questions about that today, if any. Board members, do you have any questions before we move to the complainant? We'll start with Mr. Turbinson this time.
I have no questions. Thank you.
Okay. I have a question. You know, this is a case where it sounds like you had a falling out with one of your contractors, and I'm sure this has happened before. Is it a customary practice of yours to go and do a mail forwarding from their address with your company name? I understand you didn't change. You didn't forward Garden Lake, I believe, is the corporation. But why would they be getting your mail anyway? If you're the head of the company of Collision Chiropractic, and everything is, it sounds like they send their records to you. You send it to the attorneys. There's a reduction that's made. You get the check. The check then is distributed then from you to them. Why would you forward their mail?
There have been times when mail was mistakenly sent to their.
Is that common amongst the other independently contracted
providers? It's not
providers?
Common.
Is that something
happened.
You normally do when there's a breach? When somebody wants to dissolve their contract with you, is that one of the first things you do is forward their mail? Is that your common practice?
No, this is the first time I've done that.
Okay.
I did that because it was a falling out with this provider. There was mail at times that could have been mistakenly sent to that location.
So specifically payment, check? Like what were you worried about that they were going to get that you needed to intercept?
It could be something regarding one of my patients. It could be a check. It could be multiple things. I don't know.
Okay, and you probably can understand how that could be perceived as a horrible retaliatory event that could hijack their income in the future with maybe other cases that have nothing to do with you?
I don't. I only forwarded, asked to forward Collision Chiropractor's mail.
Okay. And how did that work with the post office? Did they recognize that it was another company that was a company of another name at that address, or they just said, okay, we'll forward anything that comes under the name of Collision Chiropractic? I don't know who did that for you, if you did that.
I did it personally, and I was in contact with emails. I think the emails speak for themselves. What was done, but again, it was only Collision Chiropractor's mail that was sent. This doctor has a falling out. She has some issues with me, so it was best for my patients and my practice myself was to make sure any mail going there would not fall in there and there'd be no other issues. It was not retaliative at all.
Okay. All right, so board members, we'll start with Mr. Turbinson again. Do you have any questions?
None from me.
Well, let's cross over then to the complainant. And so due to
Dr. Garino, may I just follow up on one point?
Go ahead.
That I asked the doctor because I didn't know if it came up. He didn't direct all of his, call it 18 or 20 doctors to get Collision Chiropractic mail. So as an attorney, if I have you as a client, I might go, oh, yeah, you're going to Collision Chiropractic, or I might know it. which office are you going to? And somebody writes down the address, I send it. It can be something as innocent as that. It is not the practice where collision chiropractic mail routinely goes to 22 different offices. So I just wanted to clarify the record that, have you ever done this before? Have you ever done a change of address? It's not like it's a routine practice either. And in light of the history that we depicted, the lawsuit that's ongoing with Dr. Lajeunesse, et cetera, I mean, I think it makes, at least in my view, logical sense why you terminate the relationship in all respects.
Okay, thank you. All right, so we're going to switch and we're going to hear from the complainant. If the three of you can please step back and take a seat, and we'll continue on.
Are we coming back? Or? Probably not.
Probably not. Probably not. We're going to continue this to another day.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Hi, you can come on up. And if you will please introduce your initials for the record.
Dr. Danielle Lajeunesse.
Okay, thank you. All right, and are you represented by counsel today?
I'm not.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have anything you'd like to say before my board members ask you questions?
I do. I do. One thing I want to state that the male staff was only one of many acts of retaliation against me when Dr. Mike found out that I was the anonymous person who reported him to the board, which led to the investigation against him on June 1st, 2022. I terminated the contract with him. He forwarded the mail after the contract was terminated. Several acts of retaliation. I have so many. It's and I can understand even Hannah Lieberman, what she's gone through. So not only did he forward the mail, which I'm still having issues with getting any of my mail now. It's created a complete disaster. I'm not getting any checks, any patient records. I am just...
So what is the office's ownership in this matter when you go to them and say, this is my company, my address. How could you let somebody forward mail away from my clinic?
The inspector basically said that I did put a stop to it so that everything should be fine. However, the postmaster explained to me that the way the mail is forwarded is that they take the first four letters in the last name, which would be chiropractic, chiro, C-H-I-R-O, so C-H-I-R, and the last three numbers in the address. So the 10720, so 720, so CHIR 720. So that's all the mail. And that's what they were explaining to me, that they can't differentiate between collision chiropractors and Garden Lakes Chiropractic. So all of my mail is being forwarded, all of it. And every week I'm having my staff chasing after checks, settlement checks from firms that have nothing to do with collision chiropractors. It's like my business doesn't exist. Right now.
And so this is your physical address?
This is my physical address. I've been in practice for 20 years at that address. I'm the only one who has a lease or signs a lease with the landlord. I've never subleased. I've never allowed Dr. Mike. There's nothing in the contract saying that he's able to forward mail.
So what have you done about this? Do you now have a P.O. box?
I've opened a P.O. box, but unfortunately, again, even though I've done a mass fax, just stating, please, any settlement checks, just differentiate me between Collision Chiro and send everything to the P.O. box that has to do with Garden Lake. Law firms do have multiple departments, so unfortunately the word doesn't always get out. They have their case management software with staff turnover. So, you know, just Dr. Mike going from firm to firm, basically just saying, hey, do not work with Garden Lake. Go ahead and just send everything to Collision Chiro. It's common knowledge. And it's not even just the mail. It's so many acts of retaliation. It's, you know, like even Dr. Mike, so he threatened, he opened a clinic 1.4 miles from my clinic and convinced my staff, which I've lost probably seven staff members now, that have left my clinic. I was left with one staff member, and to build back up, which I have three now, two full-time, one part-time, and myself, My associate doctor who was working for me was convinced that Dr. Mike would crumble me, put me under. He was going to sue me, which he has. So she is now working. She's a lead provider, Dr. Denise Young, at that one clinic that 1.4 miles away from me. Other acts of retaliation, he launched a huge campaign, defamation campaign on Facebook on July 4th. He waited for my 50th birthday on July 4th to launch this campaign, which is still pinned to his Facebook page for all attorneys. He has thousands of attorneys that I work with and doctors that I co-treat with. So he's literally blacklisted me from the personal injury world. And it's unprofessional conduct. It's just, it's crazy. And he does. He does go from firm to firm. I have witnesses. I have people that would come forward and say so. He has said, stop doing business with Darn Lake. People are afraid. They're afraid of him. They're afraid of being sued. They don't want to get involved. Everybody says the same thing. We'll start doing business with you again once the dust settles. It's on and on and on. And I've done nothing but treat patients the proper way, the right way for 20 years. And when patients are being mistreated, it's my job. I took an oath to do the right thing. And anonymously, come forward.
Well, we appreciate the information that you've provided to us, and it very much helps us get to the bottom of this. So how long were you one of the Collision Chiropractor contracted providers?
Roughly 4.5 years.
And you get a 1099 every year from them?
I do.
Okay. And they dictate a fee schedule to you?
They do.
And you change your letterhead to match their company name, and you submit billing to them?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Board members, any questions?
Yes. Dr. Lejeunesse. Thank you, Dr. Bennett. When you signed the contract, were you aware of the realities of how the settlement percentages would work, that you would likely end up with not 50% of what you had billed for, but somewhere south of 25%?
No.
And you were not informed of this in any way?
No, basically I was informed that it would be a percentage, which was 50%. However, I did not realize that Dr. Mike would pretty much accept anything. So
your answer to that is that, what did it come as a surprise for you, or a source of distress or concern to you after the fact of signing the contract, that your the revenues from your services that you had billed were so drastically reduced?
They were significantly reduced.
And you were not made aware of that probability, or didn't discuss it, or?
No, it was basically just don't make it up in volume.
So it was discussed, and they said you'll make it up in volume.
It wasn't discussed. It wasn't in writing. It wasn't. I'm so sorry. My life has been turned upside down. I'm exhausted.
I appreciate that. I just would like you to make the best effort at what your recollection of that dialogue is.
When the settlement checks would come in, and it was significantly to the point of being unreasonable, where if you calculated it, it was pretty much to the point where we were paying for the patient's treatment. When you have an invoice, for example, of $5,000, let's say, and you receive from Dr. Mike a $400 check, mm-hmm. It's concerning. So, but the way it was discussed is you win some, you lose some. You'll make it up in volume.
Okay. But in truth, it was discussed. The possibility of this eventuality was discussed at the outset of the beginning of your agreement, or not?
Throughout, once it occurred. Am I explaining myself?
No. Well, perhaps I'm not asking the question properly. Okay. When you signed the contract, mm-hmm. were you aware of the fact that you would not be receiving 50% of the fees that you billed, that there would be, as is common practice in the personal injury community, mm-hmm. A significant reduction in almost every bill that you got, and that you would be receiving 50% of that reduced rate? Mm-hmm. Was that discussed?
It was not, no.
Okay. And there was nothing in writing to that effect as well?
No.
Okay, thank you. With regard to your choice in referrals, Dr. Papamathiakis?
Papamathiakis.
Papamathiakis. I mean, I'm going to try and get it right. He has stated that providers are given the choice in terms of who they refer their patients to. But that he retained exclusive control over the referral process. Tell me about your experience with regard to referrals. Were there cases where you had felt constrained that you were unable to make referrals as you felt appropriate that might have impacted the patient's care?
We could recommend the referral, which was written back to Collision Chiro. But we had no control as to where that patient would be referred to.
So you were making a referral for a service and not to a specific provider?
Correct.
Okay. And were you ever in a situation where you wished to have a patient referred to a particular provider and that was precluded by your relationship?
There were times where the patient, we would want to refer the patient to a specific, not a specific facility, but a specific specialty. Like, for example, advanced pain management versus general pain management.
Okay.
And if we would even write advanced pain management as a referral, they often would not be sent for that.
All right, thank you. And you mentioned that you had a concern with regard to the quality of the care that you provided to your patients. Can you please help me understand the basis of your referral? I'm specifically interested in if you're of the opinion that the quality of the care that the patient received was less than what you wanted to provide them by virtue of your contractual restrictions. What specifically are you talking about?
Well, similar. Similar situation where a patient would come in, be treated. We would recognize the signs, send for, and it was Dr. Young mostly treating all of the Collision Chiro patients, but she would issue a referral, for example, imaging would show significant findings, disc herniation, cord compression, and she would refer to an advanced pain management facility, and the patient would end up elsewhere.
Okay. Thank you. I have no further questions.
I have a follow-up question. This is Dr. Garino. Did you say that it sounded like you weren't aware of the fee agreement. Didn't you sign a contract? We have sample contracts, and it's pretty clearly the contract that we have, which is not signed by you, pretty clearly indicates what the fee arrangement is. Did you sign one of those 4 or 5 years ago when you started with him? Okay.
I did.
Okay. All right. Moving on. Ms. Powell?
Just a quick question. For your contract, why did you stay so long?
Honestly, because of the fear of retaliation, the fear of being blacklisted.
Okay, Mr. Turbinson.
I just have a question regarding Dr. Papamathiakis' involvement beyond a referral. Can you speak to that at all?
Beyond the referral? There was no involvement.
Okay. That is my only question.
Okay, and then my final follow-up question is, so how frequent was it that you would receive any mail from Collision Chiropractic? You know, looking at some of the materials, it looked like there was maybe MedPay payments that had your clinic address on it. And how does that even happen? Did you submit MedPay directly to MedPay, or did everything go to them? And how would your address end up on that check? And why would he have a need to forward the mail?
I don't know why he would feel a need to forward the mail.
Was it frequent that you got Collision Chiropractic mail?
This is the problem. So my business partner at the time, Kim LaFrance, who now, with the courts, has asked if she can work for Collision Chiropractors. I was my assumption that she's been working with Dr. Mike. But Kim LaFrance was in charge of the mail. It was not my duty. She was in charge of financial administrative duties, the mail. It wasn't until the end of June, I believe it was the end of June, where I actually changed the mailbox key and became aware of a lot of these. I haven't even uncovered most of what has happened. It's still in the process.
So in our board materials, this person was getting the mail and working for you, and then you uncovered some things that you didn't think should be happening. Eventually she left the practice, correct?
Well, she hasn't left the practice. We're in a member dispute, legal dispute right now. She was 50% owner of Garden Lakes Chiropractic.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm imagining someone's going to want to make a motion to continue this. Do you have any questions before we do that? Do you need to direct board staff to get anything specifically or just continue the investigation?
I would ask our board staff if there's information that they would find useful to their investigation that we don't already have.
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, they said that the 1099, that would be helpful to have. Also, patient files would be helpful to have to be able to review.
Yeah.
A list of all the doctors and their names and their location.
Past and present?
Okay, I would move that we continue this investigation on the appropriate agenda number that our attorney will provide us.
Agenda item 4.
Agenda item 4, yeah.
2023-004.
The number 004. I guess there are three of them under that tab. And that the staff be instructed to follow up with the investigative materials that we've commented upon.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, second by Ms. Powell, first by Dr. Bennett. Any further discussion, board members? Okay, I'll call for the question. Those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay, 4 ayes in favor, 1 absent. All right, so you heard what we're going to do. We're going to go ahead and continue this matter on another day, and you'll all be invited back. You'll have plenty of time to review the extra materials that you were given briefly.
I just wanted to address Dr. Gardino.
We're done with the tab, so you can bring it back in another day.
Okay. That was part of the issue, probably would.
Okay. All right, so the time now is 11:37. Our next tab is tab number 5, which we're going to take after a 10-minute recess. Okay, I think we are all here. The time is now 11:49. We're back in regular session. For any of the newly licensed chiropractors who are hanging out and joining this meeting, you can leave the meeting at noon. So you'll be free. But you can stay too. So we're on to tab number 5 now, Dr. David Slobodnik. All right, come on up. Good morning.
Good morning. Afternoon.
Not yet.
Yes.
Not yet. We're getting there. Ms. Vanderbeen?
The investigation allegations are patient abandonment, improper billing, and misleading advertising.
Okay. And we have a complainant, the initial DW. Are you present as well?
Mr. Chairman, it's the board staff's understanding that the complainant has withdrawn from this matter, but we can go ahead and proceed with their information.
All right. So, do you currently have an office?
No.
You're not working right now. Are you still selling Groupons and that kind of thing?
No.
Okay. So you had some complaints that you had sold some packages that apparently you had a surgery and you couldn't fulfill some of the packages and then some of the patients couldn't get a hold of you to get refunds. What do you say to that?
There was a couple of weeks time. What happened was my office was closed by a really, the people that own the office, the building there, are very corrupt. I went online to look at these guys because I was like, it was really strange that I would come back to my office and all of a sudden I'm locked out. I've got my stuff in there. They won't let me back in.
Were you taking your rent?
Yes. I missed 1 month.
Okay.
And he said I missed $12,000. I have to. Cashiers.
So they changed the lock?
They have a new QT in the corner right next to me. They just started building. So my only thinking is they, in a six-year lease, they can get another $100,000 out of that thing. And I just started there, and I put about $12,000 into that place. I was still fixing it up. So I was on Christmas. I had fallen at the office, and I had bolted my legs from before a fall many years ago. They snapped in half, and I had trouble walking. Anyways, I decided to go ahead and get the surgery. And I talked to the owner, and I said, hey, you know, I fell at the office. The insurance company wants you to, all you got to do is call them. If you guys remember Christmas, we had hail, it was cold, rain, all kinds of stuff.
I'm pretty crazy. Sorry, I need you to be brief. Answer the question.
All the owner had to do was say yes. It was an act of God, meaning hail, excessive cold rain, whatever that made the roof leak, and I'm covered. He wouldn't do it. So I don't know why I did that, but I don't know the reason why I closed the office. He closed it, and I didn't. I'm not equipped to deal with something like this. I don't have that kind of money to fight these people. I don't know what to do. I was scared. There was a period of a couple of months or weeks, several weeks, where I didn't know what to say to my patients. I just didn't know what to say.
What did you have done to your leg? How long did you think you were going to be out, and what is some of that?
About 6 weeks. Pull the bolts out.
Okay, so are you physically fit for practice now?
Yes.
Get back to work.
Yes. Okay.
All right, so you had a, you're on probation, and then there was some kind of a miscommunication. You didn't know that you were supposed to be taking your leave and that kind of a thing. I understand. Is that correct? And then it was remedied. You had a conversation and gave him an extension.
He stated he did not receive the executed copy of the consent agreement, and so we remailed it out and extended the date to the date that we subsequently mailed it to him. So he's gotten a 6 month extension for that.
Okay, and that started in June.
Yes.
And it's December next month, and we don't have anything compliant.
He's not provided anything in terms of compliance.
Okay, are you aware of this? You know that you've got to get this done?
I'm not following.
Okay, you know you're on probation, right?
Yes.
And you have a probation order for continuing education and other things?
Yes.
Okay, and you know that all of that is due. You have to comply with that by
90 days
within the time frame of what's listed in the order, which is 6 months from June 1st, roughly?
Yes. Let me look.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
When I read the paper regarding that, it said that you're not to do anything until both signatures. I was thinking, I don't know how these things work. I was thinking maybe I had to do something else. They decided to back out of it or something. So I called a couple of times. I even sent a letter to the board saying, hey, I haven't received my consent agreement yet. What do I do? What's going on? So,
board staff did no communication from the agreement.
Okay. Are we talking about the same thing so since June 1st?
Correct.
Okay. You've called the board since June 1st in the last 5 months?
Yes. I talked to Ryan. Yes.
Okay. All right. Board staff, can you add some clarity as to where we're at right now? What does he need to do and what time frame?
What does he need to do and what time frame? So the new order was sent on November 1st, and he has 90 days to get his fitness to practice eval and the first set of continuing education submitted to the board.
Okay.
The first set?
First set.
There's two sets plus the regular stuff.
Plus your fitness practice eval. Plus the other part of this is you have to timely renew, implement your renewal before December 31st.
Okay.
Okay. So along the allegation of patient abandonment, did you have any contact? How did you notify your patients that you were no longer able to practice, that you were locked out of your practice? How did that happen, and where are your patient files right now?
Some of the patient files are in the office. I'm locked out.
So what does that mean? Is it a digital copy on a? Is it in the cloud? Is it on a computer?
No, I don't know that kind of stuff.
Is it handwritten chart?
Yes.
Okay. So you got locked out of your office. You don't have access to the office. You might have patient information inside that office.
Yes.
That you have no access to now.
Yes. Okay. Most of the stuff is at my house. I have it at home locked up.
Okay. Board members, any questions?
Dr.
Bennett.
Hello again, Dr. Sblodnik, Dr. Bennett. So, do I understand that you are or are not currently treating patients?
I'm not.
Okay. So, and when did you stop telling or accepting Groupon payments?
Let's see, I called them about a week or two after I realized I was, 2 weeks after I was locked out. Well, these Groupon patients, they have...
I just need to know the date. I don't know when your office was locked out, so can you give me like a month, middle, end, whatever?
July.
Okay.
June, July.
Somewhere in the instance, June to July is when you... were locked out or when you stopped accepting group?
Late June, early July. I don't know the exact. When I stopped accepting new patients?
Yeah.
With Groupon, it's kind of a... They pay Groupon and then they have like 6 months, 12, no, 6 months to use that Groupon. I thought all that time I was coming right back to my office.
All right. So when you... with these Groupon patients, do I understand it properly that it's a package?
Yes, but you got to understand, I don't get anything. None of that money goes to me.
Why are you doing it?
Well, it doesn't go to me unless I see the patient, actually physically see them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just get a few bucks. But Groupon keeps all of that. They retain all of it.
Okay.
I received no money from Groupon since the day I left that the office.
Okay, so you
surgery.
The package that you are had been until apparently late June, early July, was a package of like 10 adjustments or something that you were selling for?
It's like 3 adjustments, I believe. 2 or 3 adjustments. I think there was 2 of them. Then I chopped it down to 1 where they had 2 visits. That's it. And they paid, I don't know, $20 something. I got like $4.
Okay.
It was a nice way to meet patients.
So you were doing it to as a lost leader, so to speak, to build new patient relationships? Is that?
No, you build. That's when they come in. You never know what you're going to get. Okay. It's kind of fun, though.
All right. Okay, so you stopped practicing after the fall, correct? Or at Christmas time. Then when was it that you actually said, okay, I've got to get health care, et cetera, and stop practicing?
The injury was pretty bad for a couple of weeks, and I was kind of scared. Then it started getting better.
When did you stop practicing?
Stop treating May.
May.
May or June?
May or June?
June.
Thank you. Okay. And you have not, you've not taken care of patients since then. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And what efforts have you made to procure these patient records so that you could not abandon them?
Well, I have tried to get a hold of this guy several times. His name's Kevin Siebold. You guys ought to look him up, Kevin Siebold. He's got a web page on there from a medical doctor that he screwed over really bad.
So you made several efforts to...
I went to his office, finally went to his office. He's in Tempe, South Tempe. And the guy just was going crazy. So he was going to get a restraining order on me. I was with my girlfriend. And I was just trying to get to talk to him.
Okay.
He wouldn't take my calls. He wouldn't anything.
Is there anything in writing, any correspondence between you and him with regard to this matter?
No, he's a lawyer. He doesn't like to do that kind of stuff.
I'm asking if you sent him, do you have copies of anything that you sent him?
Text?
In an effort. Yeah, any kind of, is there any record of any correspondence of your efforts to reacquire the patient records that were in there that were necessary for you to contact your patients so you weren't abandoning them?
Yes, it was both him and the other owner of the... Kevin was the majority owner, and then Jason was the one of the minor owners. I tried to contact them both repeatedly ad nauseum, and I could not get them to respond. So that's when I went to Kevin's office. I said, I need my stuff. You can't keep this from me. And I got a lot of stuff out of there, but there's more.
Okay. I have no further questions.
Okay. So I just want to get the timeline straight. You hurt your leg on Christmas, right? Mm-hmm. You had surgery when?
June.
Oh, okay. So were you practicing then?
No.
Like what happened in January? Were you able to walk on your leg?
Yeah, like I said, it was got better for a while, and then it took a turn for the worse.
Okay.
I have screws in there, and they were busted open in the tibia. They snapped in half.
Okay.
So they have their own, you know, they mind their own.
All right. And forgive me for asking. I'm just trying to follow this. So then you were locked out of your office when? May?
It was July.
July.
In July, maybe early August.
Okay. So surgery around June, locked out by July. Okay. All right. Mr. Turbinson, any questions?
None from me, thank you.
Okay. And I think the way that Groupons work, is that I had a massage therapist in my office who was doing this at one point. They sell it, but it's not redeemed until the client comes in, and then they scan it with their phone, and then you get deposited money at that point into your bank account. So even if somebody's purchasing it online, which they shouldn't be allowed to do if you can't offer the service, right?
Yes, getting a hold of them is really tough too on Groupon because they want that money coming in. They're getting paid. So they did take some time, to shut it down.
So it's
I got
down,
really angry with them.
It is shut down now. You're not selling
yes,
it anymore.
Yes, no.
But, right. Ms. Fallon, any questions before we decide what we're going to do here?
So if I may, I guess I'm now a little more confused about how Groupon works. this complaint says that the person, they were signed up for 35 sessions at $390. Was that not Groupon?
No, that would be my office.
Okay. All right. So, and then when this Groupon deal is happens, are they paying for a package in advance with Groupon and then you're being funded from it, or are they being debited by on a per visit basis?
I had two visits to work with them. They would pay $20 to Groupon, and I got $4 from it.
Okay, but they
at that point, I had a chance to meet and greet and show them chiropractors, take my x-rays.
I understand the mechanism.
And sell my own.
That's not what I'm asking.
Okay.
Specifically, what I'm asking is, when is the patient's payment made with regard to Groupon? Is it before they enter your office, or is it upon receipt of service?
Before they come to the office.
Okay.
All right. Sometimes months.
Okay. I have no further question.
Okay, so I don't see the probationary order that he's under in the visit in the material. And I'm wondering, is this a violation of the probationary order? Normally it says do all these things and obey all laws and that type of thing.
Yes.
And I don't know if we deal with that today or...
You can add the allegation of violation of the court order to the...
And, you know, you are responsible for your patient data. However you want to do it, you must have a plan for if you get locked out of your office and that kind of thing. In most offices, they have backup, digital backups, offsite backups. They figure out a way to do that. And so, you know.
This guy's destroyed my life. You have no idea.
I understand how it's affecting you, but I also, you need
I'm
to
losing
take,
my home today.
You need to take
they took
your,
my car.
You need to take your part in this, and you need to understand some of the things that you may have, maybe could have done better to protect the patient data and maybe the social securities that are numbers that might be wandering around and the money that you collected for services you can't provide now.
I don't ask those things in my office.
Okay. So what do you want to do, board member?
I have a hard time even understanding where we are. I mean, it's clear that there's a failure to maintain custody. We have noncompliance on specific orders.
Well, the order has been extended for him to meet, and he's got a couple of...
Oh, that's right.
He's got narrow timeline to go ahead and deal with that. So one option would be to continue the investigation and give him a chance to go ahead and comply with the probation order, and if not, it'll come back before us, and we can deal with it then.
Yeah.
Do you have a final...
Yeah, can I say something?
Yeah.
The thing that the stuff I'm on probation for is the same time as this guy. He just took longer to... do something. It's not like I continue to, you know.
Well,
it came from that era, you know, back then in June.
Board staff was very kind to you when they granted an extension. And so you need to honor that or you could lose your license.
I understand. I understand that. It's a financial issue for me right now. I'm not kidding. I have nowhere to live tomorrow.
I think
you guys destroyed me.
Okay.
You want to make a motion, Sean? I move that we continue this to the end of the 90-day extension, and then revisit it based upon his compliance.
Second motion.
Okay. So we got a first by Dr. Bennett, second by Ms. Paul. Any further discussion? Oh, Mr. Turbinson, is that a hand up?
No. Sorry.
Okay. All right. I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay. So four ayes have it. We're gonna give you a little more time to comply with the probation order and we'll see you after that.
Thank you.
So I know you're going through a really hard time, and, you know, good luck with all that, and I wish you
the best. I appreciate that. I really do. Please look up Kevin Siebel.
Okay, we're going to move on to tab number 6 now, a matter of Dr. Wesley Bowman. Hi, Ms. Carvis.
How's it going?
All right, never better.
Dr. Green, I have provided supplemental information to you today.
Thank you. Okay, is Dr. Bowman with us?
He's on the phone.
Yes, he is.
Hi, yes. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Leslie Bowman.
Okay, thank you. And you're represented by counsel today?
Yes, good morning. Mandy Carvis of Dr. Smith, appearing on behalf of and with Dr. Bowman, who's appearing telephonically today.
Okay, and Ms. Vanderbeam, can you go ahead and give us a board briefing?
Chair Green, if I could jump in real quick, I believe that there was an inadvertent motion for formal hearing. So if the board wants to, you can rescind that motion because it was based on an erroneous fact that we found out was not right. So if you wanted to deal with that quickly and rescind the motion, and then you can deal with everything else after. It's up to you.
Make a motion to rescind the motion
before the
hearing?
Correct. Okay, Ms. Powell, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, second by Dr. Bennett, although apprehensively. Is there any further discussion? Okay, I'll call for the question to rescind the motion to formal hearing and revert back to the normal investigative phase of this. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay. Hearing none, the motion carries. Okay, so we're back in the original investigative phase of this, and I have been given additional materials in the way of an informed consent to chiropractic treatment. It's a one-page document for the record. Now, Ms. Carvis or Ms. Vanderbeam, do you want to get us started? And then
that's all we have actually
okay.
for more stuff.
Okay.
Yes, and I just wanted to kind of address the issue and basically just move forward in terms of leaving these matters pending the ongoing criminal process, which has been there've been a lot of procedural abnormalities. I'll just say that in the criminal process. But Dr. Bowman remains on probation. He's fully compliant with everything. He completed everything in probation, and the reason we provided this additional material is just to provide the board with an extra level of comfort given the nature of the allegations while this is pending. Having a chaperone was not required by the probation that was in place, but since the criminal matters are taking a long time to resolve, Dr. Bowman voluntarily changed his informed consent document to give any and all patients the opportunity to have a staff member present during any treatment, should they desire it. Some opt to have someone present, some don't, but that is in place and has been in place for quite some time. So we just wanted to provide that to the board to have an extra level of comfort on top of continuing education and passing and taking the EBAS.
Okay, so what's different about this informed consent is you're saying that the patient can have the option to have a staff member present during treatment?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so it's not as though he's having somebody in the room with him for every patient. He's just giving them the option.
Yes, giving them the option because obviously there may be some patients that don't want someone other than their doctor present during the treatment. But it is an option, and there is always someone else there in the office should someone wish to have someone present.
Okay. All right. So as agendized, I don't think we do much more with this. Anybody have any questions?
We just continue with it.
So it's landed back to investigation.
Yes, this was already done.
You would just move to stay until the criminal case has been disposed of, which at this point could be a little based on the procedural history so far.
Move to stay pending completion of criminal investigation, not directly what he said.
Second. Okay. All right. First by Dr. Bennett, second by Ms. Paula. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay. Hearing none. Motion carries. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Happy holidays if I don't see you guys anymore.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Bowman. We're going to move on now to Dr. Joseph Greer. We have a probation status for him, case number 2022-040. And also case number 10, or tab number 10, 2021-001. Dr. Greer, I think you're here.
Yes.
Okay. Hi, good morning. Good afternoon.
Good morning.
Vanderbeek?
Mr. Chairman, is it appropriate based upon the fact that we're dealing with potentially confidential patient information that we moved into executive session?
Yep.
Yeah, I think we could start out if the board staff wants to do a non-confidential summary, and then we can move into executive session.
Very well. Thank you.
Do you want to do the probation matter first and then get to the fitness to practice eval?
Yep.
Okay. All right. In regards to the matter of probation, Dr. Greer has completed all aspects of the requirements, including the fitness to practice evaluation, the renewing his license, the additional continuing education course. So all that has been completed. So he has fulfilled his requirements for probation. And in regards to the second matter, really board staff's recommendation is to offer a consent agreement for probation to encompass the requirements of the fitness practice eval. I have a list of questions for him.
Okay, so one option is to, and he's petitioning to be taken off of probation.
Correct.
So we could grant the termination of probation request, and then we have an evaluation report that has a laundry list of things that he should comply with, and we could create a new probation order, which would give him a chance to comply with that and demonstrate that he's in good faith going to go ahead and do that. Dr. Greer, what is your wish? Do you want to stay in practice? Do you have any desire to retire and surrender your license or retire your license?
I do not want to retire.
Okay. How are you doing? Are you physically?
We can ask him if he wants to have this conversation.
Steve?
About physical and mental health.
Okay.
Executive, or if you want to do it.
Okay. We don't, so this is a public meeting and everybody can hear what you say right now. If you're comfortable discussing your physical and mental wellness, we'll do that in a public meeting. If not, we can break it into an executive session and then we can discuss it and nobody else will hear what we're talking about. What is your preference?
Whatever takes care of faster, because I'm fine.
Okay. So you're saying you don't have a preference either way?
No.
So you're okay with us discussing this in open session then?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So that being said, do we first need a motion to, whatever you guys want to do. Do you think it's reasonable to go ahead and terminate the first order of probation so we can get started on the second one, or what's your preference?
I'd like to make a motion to terminate the first probation.
Second.
Okay. So first by Ms. Powell, second by Dr. Bennett for the recorded record, and I'll call those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay. Hearing none, the previous order of probation is vacated or satisfied. So now we have this. Thank you for complying and getting the mental health evaluation. That was done, and there were a bunch of recommendations that were made. Are you willing to comply with all of the recommendations that were made?
Yes.
Okay. I think that would keep the board happy knowing that you are going to do those things. I don't think we need to read those into the record. It's part of the record.
Do you like all the recommendations?
I do.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you can just make a motion to offer a probationary consent for the fixed item, for the items listed in the evaluation.
Okay.
Yeah. I would move that we offer Dr. Greer an opportunity for probation and consent agreement that consists of compliance with all of the recommendations made and the evaluation that was that was recently performed by Dr. Phillips Lear.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Is it Philip Lett?
Yes.
Lett, sorry, L-E-T-T.
Would you like to give a time frame to complete those in?
Give me a moment to think about that, because I thought that some of this was pretty ongoing.
It is.
You could do, because we wouldn't want him to be under an indefinite probationary agreement, so... You could do 2 years.
Okay, let's do that. I think 2 years is a reasonable period. We have like biannual checkpoints in the recommendations here, so I think 2 years is.
And I can put in there, after completing all the temporal requirements that come first, if there's evidence that shows that Dr. Crew is doing well, that he could come back to the board and petition after a year, would that be acceptable?
Yes, and I would also include the requirement that at the end of the 2 year period, that notwithstanding, that scenario notwithstanding, that a formal reevaluation be performed by Dr. Lett or another provider of consequence of.
Depending on the outcomes of the evaluation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I ask one question?
Okay.
With the cost of these evaluations, about $3,000, that's a lot. I was trying to find out if there's some other way of doing that, or because according to what Dr. Lett said, there was a mild effect with the motions of my hand, not anything else. So I was trying to find out if there's any other way of doing that doesn't cost another $10,000.
We have Dr. Lett's recommendations.
Uh-huh.
And he's the professional who evaluated you and made the recommendations. And so we need to honor his recommendations, I feel, as a board member.
Okay.
You know, he's the expert. So unfortunately, the costs are going to be passed on to you for those.
Is he discussing the cost of having a new fitness practice evaluation?
Dr. Greer, can you be more specific about what you were concerned about? What was $3,000?
Well, each time I visited with him, it was right about $3,000. And if there was another way of revealing it down, because there wasn't one in Tucson, I'd go to him. But that's what it was sort of interesting.
Approved.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to go back.
Yeah,
it could be with any similar board-approved provider. And may I make a comment as well?
Yeah.
Dr. Greer, I just by way of additional comment, sir, our requirements with regard to licensure embrace both the cognitive profile and also your physical ability to perform. And as you well know, you've undergone some pretty significant health and emotional challenges of recent. And so part of this includes a primary care evaluation. It's not just about the, you know, some minor neurologic deficit that was noted. And so that's really kind of the benchmarking that the physician has recommended and that we're passing on as an option to you.
Okay.
Okay, so we have a motion on the floor. We don't have a second yet.
Then we can discuss that. I'll second.
Okay, second by Ms. Follows now for discussion.
The recommendation was 10 sessions of psychotherapy.
especially within 6 months. For any reason, we need to drive this out 2 years. In reality, Bob considers everything, if, you know, he's hitting this out for 10 sessions, and I assume they're spread out. Was he at optimal capacity? Do we need to make it that long?
You can make it 2 years, and then the decision would be, I mean, 1 year, and then either way, you do 2 years with the opportunity to get off after a year if you've shown that, you know, based on this, that he's good to go. The other thing you could do is be in reverse as well, if you wanted to.
I think we could even do better than that, maybe, because the final, all of this stuff has a 6 month time fuse. It's, you know, that's what I was talking about, biannual, with the reevaluation at the end of the 6 months. We've already stipulated in the motion that in the event that he's compliant and gets a clean bill of health, he can petition for early release from probation. My concern with just not leaving it at that is that gravity eventually wins, and we are concerned about neurocognitive degenerative conditions. And so ongoing monitoring, depending upon the recommendations of the six-month outcome, I'd like to make sure that we have the window to either say we're good or we need to continue.
Well, item number one is undergo an annual primary care evaluation, follow recommendations. So how do we do that in 6 months?
Well, my understanding of an annual primary care evaluation is...
We could start next month and it could be followed up on another year.
Well, I guess typically patients are called in for their routine annual primary care evaluation as part of a mandatory Medicare service.
Okay.
So that my interpretation of that line is that he can do one, and that's his annual one, and then move forward from there.
Okay. Good, Matt. So we have a motion and a second. Do we need to clarify the motion at this point?
I don't remember it.
No. The timeline, I guess.
So the timeline is for 2 years.
Yeah.
With the ability to petition
for early release,
pending
completion
with clean bill of health from the evaluator.
Okay, good with the second?
Second, yeah.
Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay. The ayes have it. Dr. Greer, you got a hand up? Are you trying to talk to us?
Well, I was just trying, with all the things that have been said, what's my requirements?
You're going to get notified by the board of your new probation order, and you should get that within the next couple of weeks.
Okay.
And if you don't, you need to call the board. I'm sure you'll get it, but if you didn't, you would need to call the board and say, hey, where's my board order?
Okay.
And it'll all be spelled out in there.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Is that good in a couple of weeks? How long does it take to get those out these days? Okay. Okay. I don't want to make you work too hard for the holidays.
We're going to get it all done before the holidays. We're drowning.
Okay, we're going to move on to tab number 8, Dr. Jed Zastrow.
Oh, we vacated that tab.
Vacated.
Here,
oh, that's right. Okay, how about number 9, Matthew Cohen? Hi, welcome.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone.
Hi. Can you please say your name for the recorded record?
Yeah, Matthew Cohen.
Okay, Ms. Vanderveen.
Dr. Cohen is here before you today. I provided you with a memo with some details, but as part of the agreement, he is to do a quarterly check-in with the board based on his probationary order. This is just his quarterly check-in for his. He's already submitted his Soberlink reports, which we provided to you. And so this is just your chance to check in with him on his progress in relation to the probationary order. He did not have any issues.
Okay. Well, thank you for complying with everything that you need to comply with. We had a thought to make this easier on you, you can deal directly with staff if we designate them as the designee to liaise with you, and you wouldn't have to show up in front of the board. And then if there's any problems, they can let us know, and then you would have to come back in front of the board. So is there anything you'd like to say?
No, that sounds great. Thank you for that.
Okay. So we need a motion to that regard.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that Mr. Cohen's monitoring be delegated to a board staff representative to continue the interviews on the basis that was previously established.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, second by Ms. Powell. Any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the four ayes have it, so you can deal directly with staff from this point forward.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Happy holidays.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to tab number 11, Adam Hines.
President.
Hi.
I don't even really have to be here, but I am here.
Oh, I appreciate it. Since you're here, come on up and have a seat.
Comfy seat. Nice and warm for you.
Yeah. Okay. Ms. Vanderbeek.
Before you, we have a memo from our board investigator as part of a licensing investigation. I will not read the report in its entirety, but he did answer yes to have you ever failed part four, and then answered yes to question number 36, and provided that documentation to the board and the criminal history. He does not have an active license to practice chiropractic in the United States. He has an inactive license in Pennsylvania, but he has been practicing in Peru previously. There is no licensing board in Peru, so there was not a way for us to get a license verification. So we are bringing it to you to determine how you would like to proceed with licensure
okay.
or deny licensure.
So part of the problem we have, you know, is just when we have somebody who is currently practicing, it makes it much easier for us to know that they've kept up on all continuing education and that they're up to speed on record-keeping issues, that kind of thing. So what has your history been? Have you been actually treating patients? Have you been doing hands-on chiropractic adjustments?
Yeah.
Tell us what you've done lately.
So right before just moving back to Arizona, my dad actually recently had a stroke. So that's why I'm in process of moving back to Arizona, hopefully to obtain my license and practice as a chiropractor here. In Lima, Peru, I originally moved there in 2013, working for another company. I went to Pennsylvania, as stated, worked there for a year with a friend of mine. The offer wasn't exactly what was originally advertised to me. So I looked at other opportunities between Arizona and actually going back to Peru. I wound up going back to Peru. I actually own and run, at the current moment, 9 clinics down there, 9 chiropractic clinics. We treat, there's no insurance for chiropractic down there, but we do all of our record keeping, all that kind of stuff. We do electronic health records. It's a very basic system, but yeah, I've been practicing for the last 9 years, well, 8 of 9 in Lima, Peru. I see anywhere from 300 to 500 patients a week for visits.
You personally?
I do. I personally see 300 to 500. Our company sees, I mean, each office sees at least 200 to 300.
So how many a day and how many days a week do you work?
I was working, again, 6 days a week. We did Monday, Wednesday, Friday, full days, Tuesday, Thursday in the afternoons, and then Saturday mornings. I've done that, again, the last 5 years. I usually do advertising and other events on Sundays, but lately I haven't had to do as much of that.
And for talking about that.
Yeah. Yes, it was a lot of work getting started, but, you know, after the first couple years and we started rolling out the others, and it's been good ever since. But, yeah, a lot of work.
Okay. So, board members, what's your preference?
A couple questions, sure.
Yes.
Dr. Hang, I'm Dr. Dennett. What's your practice plan for here in Arizona?
So upon a hopeful active license, I already have a job lined up with ASC Chiropractic to be one of their chiropractic or clinic directors in their one of their locations. I'm just basically starting training and waiting for activation of my license.
And
I do have an employment.
Okay, thank you. And with regard to continuing education?
Whatever the board suggests, I'm open and more than willing to. Hmm. I actually do my personal own kind of continuing education, but there wasn't anything, you know, with whatever credits that, you know, could be whatever sent directly, I guess.
I think you can get certification for CEs in Lima, Peru. Is that
that's the point. Yes, correct.
Okay. So what is that personal education?
Usually, personally for me, it was a lot of business financing classes that I took online, different like online universities and stuff like that. Kind of like a master's in business administration classes that I took. But as far as chiropractic, I have a good friend of mine who actually does like CE credits in California. He literally does all these PowerPoints and all these YouTube videos, and whenever he does them, he always sends them to me. I listen or go through them just out of pure interest in his knowledge. But again, I don't have any concrete whatever CE credits to present.
Okay, thank you.
What do you need? Some type of active practice affidavit that he would have to sign out?
So our recommendation was in reviewing this and the fact that I'd like to remind you that this is a license for universal recognition. So if you were moving towards
examination.
Oh, is it examination? Yeah. I'm sorry. I thought this thing was universal recognition. My apologies. Ignore what I just said. That we would just grant a licensure with a consent agreement for 24 hours of continuing education. It's at least 6 hours in the area of record-keeping documentation, 6 hours in the area of patient management, and 4 hours in the area of jurisprudence, and then have him sign an active practice affidavit, which would be would be similar to if he was applying by licensure by reciprocity or endorsement, because that's all we receive from them is just that active practice notification. Or if you would like to, you could have him take the section exam.
If we do the CEs, if we take the CEs, we do that for a non-disciplinary licensure. With the study exam, I'm not sure, because that would actually require him to take the clear examination.
What was the term of that document? Non-disciplinary what?
Non-disciplinary consent agreement for continuing education and licensure.
Okay.
So would that be agreeable to you if we had you do a non-disciplinary consent agreement for continuing education to make sure that we bring you up to speed?
Yeah, I believe that's completely understandable. Basically, I just need to do 24 hours of credit instead of the normal 12 or 16 or whatever else. That's completely fine, yeah.
And then you would just need to provide us with, we'll provide a form for you, the active practice evidence. You would just have it notarized saying that you've been actively practicing for the last 5 out of the 7 years.
None of that, okay. Of course.
I would move that we...
only one question, notarized in Arizona is fine. I don't have to go back to Peru to notarize it.
Yep.
You're good.
Oh, that's a deal breaker.
I actually have to take the board attorney.
Yes, there you go.
Verify.
Well,
if he goes,
we
go.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, really, we'll go to Machu Picchu, guys, all right? If you haven't been.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we grant licensure upon completion of an affidavit of active practice, an agreement for a non-disciplinary consent agreement for continuing education and licensure for hours to consist of 24 hours cumulatively, 6 hours to be documentation and record keeping, 6 hours of patient care management, 4 hours of jurisprudence, and 6 hours of otherwise board approved optional education, and that these requirements be completed within 90 days.
Not a problem. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion, board members? Okay. Hearing none, I'll call for the question to grant licensure upon the conditions noted. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay, the ayes have it. Welcome to Arizona.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm assuming I get the affidavit in my email.
You'll get a consent agreement for signature and the affidavit.
Thank you guys very much.
Okay. Tab number 12 is Donald Janowski.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, board chairman, board members, and staff.
Okay. Ms. Pendergreen?
You have a memo from our board investigator from an investigation for an application for licensure. This license is by universal recognition. And during the course of the application process, on the application, he answered question number 30 that he had previously filed an application and he was licensed back in 2005. His license lapsed in 2014. When he asked question number 36, he answered no. However, when his background check came back, he had a hit on his background in regards to an arrest. And so we provided that, and upon further clarification from the investigative side, it appears that that matter was erroneous and it had been expunged from his record, but it still came back on the background. And that is all, unless you have questions.
Thank you. Okay. So we bump into this from time to time. The question is pretty clear. Have you ever been arrested? And the answer to that for you will be yes on renewals and that type of thing, because you were, even if it turned out to be erroneous, and then you just need to explain. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, I was under the impression after speaking with the supervisor and the police, the supervisor that I spoke with, not the officer who detained me, but the sergeant, because I left the department with a citation as having no license, and I knew that was wrong, and so I called the DMV in New York State, verified that it was accurate, went back, had a conversation with the sergeant and the officer who pulled me over, and they had erroneous information in the field. He had the wrong information. He had my Arizona license, which had been canceled because I moved back to New York at a point and moved back to Arizona. And so I had my New York State license at the time I was pulled over. And so my point is, Chairman, is that when I finished the conversation with the supervisor in the police station, when I came back to figure out what was going on, I asked him specifically, I said, is this a non-issue? Does this not exist? And so he said yes. So I was under the impression, until I got a ding on my FBI or my fingerprint thing, that it was even an issue. I didn't realize it even existed. And then I called the Chandler Police Department to get a full report, which I'd never gotten a full report. And she had told me, the records person at the police station had told me that once they fingerprint you, that always stays with you. I had no idea that that was an issue. I didn't realize it until the point that she told me, and the fingerprint issue came back. So I was under the assumption that I wasn't officially arrested. So I wasn't, my intention was not to mislead anybody or anything. I just didn't realize that that was the case.
Okay. Thanks for the explanation. Board members, any questions?
No questions. I make a motion to grant licensure pending all appropriate fees
paid. Second. Okay. First by Ms. Powell, second by Dr. Bennett. Board members, any further discussion? Hearing none, the motion is to grant licensure. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay. Hearing none, you'll be granted a license.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. All right. We are in the final throes of our agenda here. Tab number 13 is possible action for approval for educational video regarding Senate Bill 1077, the access bill.
I will recommend that Dr. Bennett address this one.
The board likes to go into executive session.
Okay, is there a second?
Yeah.
Sure. Second by Dr. Bennett. Those in favor of going into executive session at 12:45 p.m. signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we're in executive session. We'll be back shortly. The time is 12:51. Mm-hmm. We're back in open session. So. Would anyone like to make a motion?
Well, I'll make a motion to have our attorney presented. Board staff presented to the governor's office just for oversight approval.
Yes.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay, the ayes have it. Let's move on to tab number 14. And great job, by the way, Dr. Bennett.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate your effort. So review and request for board approved monitor by Grant Shapiro, D.C.
You have a memo from me. Dr. Shapiro reached out and has requested to add the status of probationary listed from his monitoring status on the board's website. He did provide you with his letter of intent, his CV, and some additional certifications. And so it's up to the board to determine whether you would like to remove the probationary status or take no action. And it would, he would just remain on probation. He would still be a board approved provider, but
okay.
The probationary status.
Dr. Shapiro, are you with us in the meeting? Anything you'd like to say at this point? Yes, not? Okay. Paul?
Make a motion to remove him from probation status.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are any opposed? Okay. The ayes have it. Let's move on to the Executive Director's Report, tab 15.
Included in your materials is the board's monthly financial report. We're kind of operating the same as we have been. Nothing's really changed. I did spend some time in the last, since our last meeting, responding to two requests from the governor's office as they relate to our funding request for the upcoming 2024 fiscal year. So we've requested to increase staff by one and go back and fund the deputy director position. So in an effort to kind of stabilize the board, we gave board staff pretty significant pay increases, which kind of used up a lot of our personnel funds. And so we haven't been funding the deputy director position. The way the funding works is we have the position, we just don't have the money to pay for the position. So we were hoping to create some, and it's just taken longer than I anticipated. So maybe that's somewhat my fault in my anticipation, but that moving to the new database would help alleviate a lot of the work the staff does. We manage a lot of spreadsheets, just trying to keep track of complaints and things like that, that as we move to this new database, some of that would go away. Like, we wouldn't be chasing applications like we have been previously because you can't not submit a complete application. Renewals go to completely kind of an online, you click a couple buttons, you upload your CVs, and that's kind of the end of it, and we just kind of go back in and review it. So some of those things become easier, and we have a lighter touch in that regard. It's taken longer than I anticipated. I think we should have a finished product by February, first part of February. So it's just, so we had to kind of make some changes. We were supposed to have it before renewal started. That was a promise to us. It got delayed. So that kind of created some of this, I think, stress within board staff. We were processing a lot of renewals, we're processing CE applications, all of that. So that's kind of the next piece of the puzzle that needs to fall in place for us. We're almost there. So financially, we're just kind of chugging along the way we were. Like I said, we responded to a whole bunch of questions specifically around investigations, how long it takes us to close investigations, why does it take so long, what is the process for closing them, those types of things. So pretty detailed questions that we've been responding to. So I've not heard back from them. From what I understand, they say that the new administration was reviewing these requests over the last few years. So I haven't heard anything else since then. So that's financially where we are. We're managing appropriately. We're not overspending anything like that. So and then in regards to the database, like I said, we should have a final product by the first part of February. And then the next thing that we're kind of in the works that we're working on in the background is doing some improvements to our CE process. I think that's part of where we're seeing some of the rub is just it hasn't been a process that's been managed. And so providers are very frustrated on their end. They don't know how to get us an application or which application they should be using. So trying to kind of clean that up and spending some time moving forward, maybe working with CE broker or something to that effect to move to that type of platform where staff isn't having to touch it as much and providing some enhancements there. We were hoping when we were going to Cynthia that it would be CE would be part of that product. It is not part of their product. So that was kind of something that blindsided us that we weren't prepared for, but there are some other options out there that we can look for, and we can also make a funding request maybe in the future to purchase that type of enhancement and have them work with us to build that. So there's some options on the table in regards to that. So that is where Cynthia is, and where Ryan is right now currently doing kind of the last passed over in the application portal, so it'll be completely online application portal. No more paper applications. The other exciting news I have to share is in the last 3 months, we have had all of the licensing files scanned. So now all of your licensing files are electronic. We have no more paper storage. So anytime we need a licensure file, we can pull it up electronically. So long run, that is going to be a cost saving because we will no longer be paying for some of that file storage. Because we've had to have a third-party source for all those files. So they are now electronically stored. There's an electronic retention program, all of that. So
is that a big expense?
We split it out over 2 years. So it was like $10,000 for 2 years. So we paid part of it out of last year's funds because we had excess, and then we paid the other part of this year. So kind of split it up so it wasn't quite so painful, but yeah. But that was part of that cost savings too. Cutting that position kind of allowed us to do some of these technological things that we didn't have.
What is the biggest source of our income that the board actually gets received for?
It's renewals. It's renewals. Mm-hmm.
And we don't get to keep any penalties. They go into the general.
Well, that's not actually 100% accurate. We do keep part of that.
I don't need to know any more than
that.
So, yeah, well, so when you charge for, like, when you request investigative costs, those go to us.
Okay.
And we do get a certain portion of the late fees back to us. We get a part of that.
Okay. And so I think what I was reading was that if there are damages or penalties, those go to the general fund.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing I would like to point out to you that I did learn over the course of responding to the governor's office, and I think you all should be greatly applauded, since March of this year, we have closed 55 cases.
Ooh. Yay. Especially those of us who attended the last sunset.
So yeah, that was kind of part of that. Yeah, we've closed that. That's huge. And we still have 39 though that are open and still need to go to initial action. But I mean, that's huge. I mean, that's a huge, huge list. And that was part of the conversation that I was having with the governor's office. I'm like, I understand you see only the investigative side, but understand that every action the board takes, there's the follow-up on the back end, and if we aren't doing the follow-up part, it doesn't matter what you guys order, because there's no teeth. So we had those kind of discussions with that part of that staff member that we're missing. I provided you my normal complaint log, just so you know we have total cases over 180 days is 56, and there's a direct correlation between the number of cases we put on an agenda and the number of cases that are get over 180 days. The heavier your agendas, the lower that number tends to be. And so because of cases like the ones we had today, where obviously it impacts the board staff ability to investigate, so the number's lower when we have a huge investigation like that case today. That's Ryan's bandwidth, to be honest. So, and so we have three cases left from 2020. We have 28 from 2022. So we're starting to kind of those last ones that we're closing out. We're almost there with some of that older stuff. Yeah. 2021 we saw 11, but I provided you some data on open versus closed cases. Just kind of pointing out that over time, your high priority cases have really started to tick up. So we're starting to see more in the sexual misconduct areas, DUIs, substance abuse, those types of cases we're seeing an increase in, and some of those other like documentation record keeping cases seem to be kind of tapering down. So, and that also directly. Well, and that also directly impacts the number, how long it takes us to close those cases. Those red cases seem to be taking about 365 days to close versus some of your lower cases where we can send those out quickly and things like that. That's where some of that delay is. If the investigation is longer, we're often waiting for criminal proceedings, so there's some of that causes them to languish a little longer. And then the last piece I would like to provide to you is that renewals are in full swing. I know that you are probably hearing from people. As of yesterday, and I think we're up to a little bit more than this because I haven't pulled the numbers from this morning, but we've received 559 renewals already. And of those, we've processed 294. We've about 265 still to process, but we have 59 that were kind of deeming deficient, which means they didn't provide their continuing education. Their address wasn't correct. We're really trying to use this as an opportunity to clean up the database. So making sure we get that home address, that practice address, and can delineate and identify between the two. So there's a lot of that going back and forth. And then because of how it's set up this time, we're having them pay on the front end, and then they get access to the form on the second step. So they're getting sent a link for that application. I think Dr. Green and Dr. Bennett, you went through that process. So anybody that we receive a payment for, we are immediately turning around saying, okay, we see your payment, but we don't have an application and you have 60 days to get us that application. Otherwise, your renewal will be closed. And so trying to deal with some of that on the front end, and then we're sending, if we don't have it in 30 days, we're sending another follow-up saying, we have your payment, still don't have your application, and here's how you get to it. So trying to provide that kind of customer service and fielding a lot of those phone calls.
I think that's going to eliminate a lot of the issues that we've had where people thought they'd completed the process, mm-hmm. but then didn't.
Yeah.
And this is proactively making them pay, and mm-hmm. then so that's good. I like that.
So, well, and I want you to feel like when they come before the board, you have the confidence that we have thoroughly communicated with them the status of their application, so that when you're asking those questions, we've been asking for the application, and we've also provided them multiple ways to receive that application. So this number, this 559, doesn't include the number of paper applications we've received. How many have we gotten up to? So we've received 40 paper applications. So we did give people the option. If you want to print it in, print it out at home, fill it out by hand, and bring it into the office or mail it into the office, that is your option. If you want to pay by credit card and send it in that way, we'll accept it that way. So they have full options in terms of how they would like to have their application.
How would they drop a physical application? Would they go upstairs and drop it, or would they drop it at the front?
At the window.
Security? Okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have to deal with that. Yep.
They can drop it at window 6, and then when we pick up the mail, we pick up those.
Okay.
So there's a lot of options. If they want to come in and physically pick up an application, they go to window 6. They already have some frequencies, and they can just take them with them.
Okay.
And then the last thing is, in terms of continuing education, board staff has processed 155 continuing education applications.
That's all.
How many are left?
I want to say we have like 35, but we've got a box from
Parker. We just got like a box.
Yeah, we've got a box. And I think the other thing I really want board staff to understand, to do a continuing education, or not board staff, the board to understand, to do a continuing education application actually is more work than to do a licensing application. It's far, it's much heavier, it's much, and we're only getting $50. And we are trying to routinely get things back to kind of a level playing field where we're following all the rules for everyone consistently. And I think that's some of what you all are feeling, is the rules are being applied unilaterally now and not, well, this was how it was done last time. So I think that's some of what you're receiving.
And let me just say, because I want to be completely transparent, I've been in the Valley for a long time, my whole life, okay? So I know tons of chiropractors. I think I know them all, except they're coming full circle now to New Grass. They call me when something's wrong. I don't know why, maybe because they heard I was on the board. So I'm communicating to you, whatever you want to do. I am happy to stop communicating them to you and just ignore those text emails or whatever. Oh, I don't want you to think I ever doubt that you're not working as hard and fast and diligent. I know that. Okay. Yeah. I just don't know what to do with these guys.
No, I appreciate that. And a lot of it, I think, too, is I as the executive director, sometimes I get bypassed. Like, they've maybe talked to staff, and they've never had a conversation with me. And so that's part of my role here, is I want to take that off of you, that you're not responsible to the administrative process. That's my role, my responsibility. And so you can always refer them to me if they have a question. Or just when you talk to them, just say, you know what, I would recommend you contact the executive director. My phone number, my email is on the website. There's no general info. It's my email.
I think that would be best, because I don't call them and say, okay, I'm going to have you talk to our executive director. Yeah, I like that you keep me in the loop, but really ultimately they need to work it out with staff, and that'd be great.
Give them my phone number and have them call me.
Yeah, and that's why the recent one bothered me, to take a break. Oh, I've called six times. Meanwhile, they've never talked to you.
They've never talked to me. They've talked to Ryan multiple times. They've talked to Connie. They've talked to Larry. Like, Dave, I mean, that's,
yeah.
So, and I understand that you're not necessarily, and it's a lot easier for me to get the whole story.
Everything has been great.
That's fine. That's what I'm here for. Do you have any questions for me? That follows my report.
Appreciating the fact that right before board meetings, when you're getting board materials together, is probably a concentrated, intense period of time. So if you say, no, I don't want to do this, what I'm about to ask, I understand.
Okay.
But I would like, if possible, to get your executive director report prior to the meeting. It hasn't been, sometimes it's in the board materials and sometimes it's not when I review them.
Mm-hmm.
I would prefer to be able to look at the numbers prior to the meeting and do a little homework to come in. So
okay.
I can ask irritating questions.
Well, maybe I don't give them to you. You can't ask them.
We'll be here forever.
Then I'll just ask irritating questions that are uninformed irritating questions. No, that's all.
No, I'm happy, it's usually because when you guys, I want to give you the closest numbers and sometimes financial reports, things like that, I don't have until right before because of how our meetings fall from the month closure.
Yeah.
But other reports, it's easier. But sometimes, like, we're still closing out last month's meeting, those kind of things. I don't have everything quite finished for you all when we get report material.
Well, I really like your reporting format. And I said, Rich and I can say this based upon the experience that we went through prior to your arrival and what we knew and what we didn't know and what we found out we didn't know from people who were monitoring our process.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really like the format. That's why I like looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I will try to do better to get it to you earlier. I usually try to have it done before we all meet, but sometimes with everything, I think this month, I would say,
yeah, this month is a wild card.
Yeah. So, I mean, I told Dr. Drano and Dr. Bennett that before you all received board materials, 11:30, then that Friday night, Ryan and I were still writing Dr. Papamathiakis' report.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I just got it done.
Well, we had, that was the reason we had to pull it. It was because it wasn't done. We had it scheduled once. So there's just a lot there.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot more.
If you have any other questions for me?
No, again, I would echo what Dr. Bennett said. I really appreciate the reporting and how you do it. It's constant and inspiring for our next sunset review.
Well, and sometimes I don't have, like, the materials on your, case closure rates. I didn't have that until I had to start responding to the governor's office, and I really had to go do the deep dive in terms of, well, what have we been doing? So that was kind of an added. I was like, oh, you should see this.
Okay. Well, I'm going to call to the public. This is our opportunity to hear from members like Tony Gross. But if anybody has anything that they want to say, of course they can say anything. They could say that Seamus looks 10 pounds lighter with his new haircut. But we can't comment back because it's not meant to be a two-way conversation because it's not agendized for our agenda. So I'm calling to the public. Anybody have anything that they would like to say?
Comment, questions, members of the board, Dr. Steve, thanks for the opportunity. In this conversation that the main income to the board is through licensing, right? But not through continuing applications. Has this been explored that it just move and accept state SCLB courses as acceptable for state CEs? I guess you can't respond to that.
It is already.
Proposing that because I personally don't like having to speak out the numbers so that I'm in the licensing certain. It would have to be something the board has been in.
Your comments are appreciated, sir.
Okay.
We can't reply to any of that, but yeah, the
you can put it on the next agenda.
We could.
Or you can take it off
the or have a conversation later.
Okay. Anybody else? Anybody virtually have anything to say? Okay. The meeting is adjourned at 1:14 p.m. Thank you, everybody.